Steve. Thank you. Hi, everybody. It's us. It's Bill and Wendy bringing you another week of entertainment and enlightenment.
Is that our goal?
I don't know. We should have a goal. Is that our goal? Everybody else has a goal, a mission statement. I don't know. Do we have one?
Bill, we've gone this long in our lives without setting goals for ourselves. Why start
change
now?
It? All right. So you may be entertained. You may be enlightened. If it happens, it happens. Is that fair?
I like
That's
it.
That's fair. Nice weekend for you?
Yes. Exciting weekend. Did a lot of cooking because I like to cook and I only have time on the weekends. And I blew up a light fixture.
Oh, you did?
I turned
How'd
the light
this
on. I like to upcycle, as the kids call it today.
Uh-huh.
So I took a really old chandelier that was ugly and brass, and I spray painted it kind of a bronzy black kind of thing, and we had it hung in the kitchen for quite some time. And when I turned the switch on, actually there was a light bulb burned out. So I said, I'm just going to put a new light bulb in the chandelier, and I didn't turn the switch off to put the light bulb in, because really, why?
Right.
And it popped, and sparks were flying.
Really? That happens? I've seen that happen in TV shows
Me
and movies. I didn't think it really happened in real life.
So then Jim comes downstairs, and I say, don't turn the light switch on. This thing just sparked at me. And he goes, oh, this light switch, and turned it on like a dummy.
The right move.
And it sparked again. So I said, I texted my electrician. Because, you know, we have a personal relationship. And
I was going to say, you're on a texting relationship with your electrician?
I love my electrician, Pete Mantel. And I said, hey, here's a quick question. I changed a light bulb with the switch on. It popped. It sparked. Do you think it's just an old fixture?
Right.
And he said, I think it either needs to be rewired or tossed. So that gave me an excuse to go get a new light fixture, and I installed it in my kitchen, and I love it.
You put it in yourself.
Yep.
Because after sparking, I would let Pete Mantel, I would have Pete come and do it. I wouldn't trust the electricity.
Well, no, I just turned off the circuits. I knew I was hoping it was the fixture. I know he couldn't really tell over the phone.
Right. Pete Mantel is good, but... Come on.
Well, I just screwed him out of a job. Like, if I was him, I would have said, no.
Make sure I'm the one who comes. Your house could blow up. Electricity could just take your house in a second.
Nope. He just said it sounds like it's the fixture, and it's a really old fixture.
Yeah.
And we have an old part of our house with knob and tube wiring, which has to get updated. This was the new part, so I just found I looked online to find out that a yellow wire matches a green wire. That's the grounding one.
Uh-huh.
Black and purple is live, and white is neutral. Bing, bang, boom.
I swear to you, there's no way I would have trusted myself. I would have called not just Pete Mantel in, but a team of electricians from all parts of the world to make sure that it was safe.
I took a picture of the socket before I changed the light just to make sure.
Yeah.
So I was looking at that on the ceiling, and I fished out the yellow wire. We'll put a picture up.
You weren't afraid at all?
No, because I turned the power off, but it took me five times to find the circuit breaker that matched that particular part.
Of course.
So I up and down.
Was there someone upstairs? Is it on now? Is it off now?
right?
You do that?
You have to do that yelling.
Jim wouldn't help me.
What's happening now? No sparking. What's happening now? Still no sparking.
That's the kitchen. Oh, no, that's the bathroom. Oh, I hate that.
Jim finds it a perfect time to sit in the bathroom for an hour with his iPhone. When I'm, you know,
what timing?
Can you help me? So I was just going up and down. He just was steering clear. He got me the ladder. So that's all I wanted.
That was good. Well, he helped to some extent then.
And I put a new fixture up. And
that's impressive.
And it's what a cool new fixture it is.
That's impressive. Wow. Good for you. That's a lot.
You need any electrical work done?
Well, I'm loyal to Pete Mantel. You know me. Once I find an electrician, I don't stray from the path.
Well, I felt funny texting him.
Well, but you obviously, as you said, you have a relationship with him to where he knows if it's something you can do, he'll say, here's all you need to do, do it.
And he's busy.
Yeah, well, sure, this is the season. This is electricity season.
Yeah, doing his job.
It was a Sunday. Right. I thought, you know, he has kids. He could be at church. He could be at, you know.
Charging time and half.
I'm now on electricity.com's website, and they announced that Chicago electrician Pete Mantel has filed for bankruptcy. Isn't that sad?
I still have plenty of work for him to do. Because really, these old houses, it's knob and tube wiring, and if you're not familiar with that, it's cloth.
Yeah.
So it is like a fire hazard waiting to happen, and you have to like rip up ceilings and floors and do all this. And I said, you know, are we in danger of a fire? This was last time he was over. Mm-hmm. And he said, well, a precursor to that would be if you blow fuses a lot or you trip the circuit breaker. Oh, and I said, that never happens.
Sure.
And he said, okay, but ultimately we're going to have to do it. So I can get him back out of bankruptcy.
I hope so. Can I tell you the difference between you and I? You just explained you had a chandelier that sparked and you replaced it yourself. We have in our house two different lights, one in a pantry and one in a closet, where the chain has been pulled off.
Oh, yeah,
from
I
me.
Hate that.
One has been out for 3 years, the other for 2.5 years.
Just how do you turn it on?
We have gone without light in both the pantry and the closet because I don't know how to do it. And I don't want to bring in an electrician to laugh at me and go, you know, all you had to do is put this chain. All you had to do is clip the chain on and look, clink, 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 light again.
Well, if it breaks in there, you got to get a new mechanism. Or I would. Is it just like a white round socket that you screw the bulb in?
Maybe. I don't know. We listed our house. The house is for sale. I don't know how to do it. I have no idea how to do it. I want to share with you another technological wonder from this weekend, something cataclysmic for me. Stick around. A lot more show. Want to jump in? 312-981-7200 gets that done. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Tuesday, the White Sox are back on WGN, and this season is going to be a big one. Watch the White Sox battle the Oakland A's. Reggie Jackson and the Oakland A's, Tuesday night at 9.
He's still playing?
Yeah, Reggie Jackson is still with the Oakland A's.
Sox are going to be good this year.
You know what? I think so, too. I really do.
The Adam LaRoche stuff is off their plate. They're
right.
Done with that.
Right.
Not a word has been spoken about that anywhere. It just fizzled.
Well, there was an edict from the team's higher-up saying, let's lay low on this thing, and they have. So, yeah, I'm hoping good things for both baseball teams this year. I really am. I want to tell you what happened last night, and as I tell you this, I want to say I will be extremely sensitive to anybody who has not seen the season finale of Walking Dead. I won't give away anything that you don't already know, I promise. All right. I've been looking forward to this episode all week long, all season long. Something cataclysmic was going to happen. We knew that. We didn't know what, but it's the end of the season. I'm watching the show, and usually Walking Dead is an hour long. Last night it was 95 minutes long.
Right. We knew that.
My DVR only taped 93 of the 95 minutes. So at the very end of the episode,
oh my God,
where something major is about to take place.
Is that why you're cranky this morning when I brought it up?
Well, no, because I stayed up and they run it again at 12:30.
Oh.
So I went back and watched the ending about 1:45 last night just because I missed the last minute and a half.
Which is crucial.
Extremely crucial. They're building up and building up and building up to this minute, and I'm watching it going, oh no, what's it going to be? What's it going to be? What's it going to be? And it just stops. Freeze frame. The Jay Giles band came to my house and sang freeze frame. And I just sat there going, that can't happen in this world of technology where anything is possible. Could that just have happened? And it did just happen.
Well, how did it happen? Because we didn't set it for extra. We just set it, you know, we have a season pass to do The Walking Dead.
So that's what I have, too, is every time there's a new episode, it tapes the whole last episode. But for some reason, within the constraints of whatever they set with the people at DVR Co., I don't know I don't know how the magic works. I don't know how it decides start taping then and end taping then. But with about a minute and a half to go, it just stops. It freeze frames. Luckily, it's one of the only shows, you know, on regular cable, they have the ability to run it a second time
later. They
late
do that
night.
With the OJ thing,
yeah,
too.
They do that with that. Yeah.
The OJ show,
yeah,
as I call
OJ
it.
The OJ show. Ba, 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 ba. It's the OJ show. So I did. I stayed up and I watched it at 1:45 just to get that last minute and a half burst in.
Which was very disturbing to me, I might just
for
say.
For so many reasons. Yeah,
yeah,
for so many reasons. If you're a fan of the show, I hope what you saw you liked.
And then good luck waiting until October because I can't stand
it. That's a long wait.
I don't like these long cliffhangers.
It's a long wait.
You know, they did show a minute trailer of Fear the Walking Dead, which starts next week. So maybe that screwed you up 1 minute.
I don't know what it was. I don't know why it just cut out where it did, but it was reminiscent of, remember on the very last episode of The Sopranos where it faded to black at the very end? I thought,
spoiler alert.
For anyone who hasn't seen it. And then I'll end the last episode of I Dream of Jeannie for everybody.
Spoiler alert.
I hate to do that at this point. But at the last episode of The Sopranos where something major was about to go down, it went to pitch black. And I thought that's what I was seeing yesterday with the freeze frame. I'm like, would they just freeze frame this? They wouldn't do that to me, would they?
But when did you figure out that you didn't have it all?
I knew that it was running close on the time because I was fast forwarding through commercials and I'm like, wow, can they get this whole last segment in 6.5 minutes, you know? And they didn't. So
that stinks.
I got to see it. I stayed up and I watched it, but it was just a little bit on the awkward side.
Negan is one bad apple. I know you think you are, but he is.
He's worse than I am. He is a mean man who carries a large stick.
Lucille. Yeah.
Yep.
That's very original, by the way.
Also, I got to see part of NHL history yesterday at the United Center as Patrick Kane scored a hat trick. And I've never been in a hockey game where somebody does that.
So talk. Were people throwing their hats?
Yeah, and I was tempted to. I almost did.
We brought this up because evidently you can go pick them up at the end of the game.
I didn't know that. I was about to. I was very close to. Except
Bill's always about to.
Do you know why I didn't? Because the guy sitting not next to me, but next to the guy sitting next to me, threw his. And because, I mean, we weren't right on the ice. We were back a ways. He threw the hat, and it landed about 18 rows in front of us, 17 or 18 rows in front of us. So I thought, if I'm going to throw my hat on the ice, I want some assurance. They don't give you assurance that it'll land on the ice. Because a bunch of people were throwing their hats. It wasn't just him. A bunch of people were throwing their hats. And for people who have not usually thrown a hat, there's a lot to take into account as you're throwing your hat.
There's some funny aerodynamics involved there, too.
There is. A hat doesn't
Do you
throw.
Frisbee it? Do you overhand it? See?
In my head, I'm like, I'm not going to do the traditional... like, I hate to say this.
Like a
but,
girl.
Well, I would never say that.
Yeah, but you were thinking that. I read your thought bubble.
But there's people who don't throw as hard as other
right.
people, and I didn't want to...
And they usually make that sound.
When you're throwing the hat. So I'm like, if I'm going to throw it, I need it. I thought I should run up toward the ice and throw it over that way.
And security takes you out as you're running up.
Right.
That would have been good. You would have been on TV.
Right. Nicholas Chalmerson warned us about you. Are you going to attack Mr. Chalmerson? No, I just want to throw my hat on the ice. So that split second where I'm looking around and I'm seeing a lot of people get it on the ice very successfully, but just as many people Jill Egan, for instance, was there. She tried to throw her hat on the ice.
You know, they have a switch they can turn off their microphone. That has just been updated.
They choose
just so
not
you know.
To. They choose not
My
to.
My fault.
They absolutely choose not to.
So I understand you didn't want to waste your toss.
I thought if I throw it on the ice, we learned a few weeks ago, you can go to the office when the game is over and get your hat back. But if I throw it and it just lands, some family from Des Plaines is sitting there and all of a sudden they go, we just got a Blackhawks hat. I didn't want that to happen. I'm sure they were nice people, but...
And I'll bet you something, and this is just me being anal and over-preparing for everything.
Right.
I'll bet you $50 your name isn't on that hat.
It's not on my hat. No,
See,
it is not.
So how do you know you're getting your own hat back?
That's tricky, too. That's tricky for last night. I started to tell you this. I had a pocket full of barbecue sauce at that point. This is a weird story, but between periods, I went with my daughter Kylie, and we went to the refreshment stand, and she wanted a thing of fries. We got a thing of fries, and it comes with one, but she got an extra giant container of barbecue sauce.
How about ketchup?
Well, you could get ketchup. That's an option. But she chose barbecue sauce. But they'll give you ketchup or mustard or whatever you want. Or you can get a little thing of orange soda if you want to dip it in orange soda. I don't know why you would. So I'm kidding with Kylie. And I said, you know, we should bring one of these sauces home for Reese, for her sister. I go, you know, that would be fair. I brought you to a hockey game where there's a hat trick. We should bring her some barbecue sauce, make everything even. So as a joke, I put it in my coat pocket. And then toward the end of the game, I reached in my coat pocket to get my phone. And my phone, my glasses, my Altoids, my ticket stub, like everything I own that was in that pocket, completely drenched in barbecue sauce.
Was it in a little plastic container with a lid on it?
It was at first.
Okay, because that I would never trust in my pocket.
I won't ever again.
If it's a sealed packet.
That would be fun.
Yeah,
that would be fun.
I don't know what you were thinking.
I don't know. Barbecue sauce, you would think, would play by the rules, but it didn't. So I reached inside, and then I pull out. It looked like a precursor to The Walking Dead. I pull my hand out, and it looked like I put my hand in a meat shredder, but it was just barbecue sauce. And I don't have any paper towels or anything around me.
Of course not, because you're a guy.
I wanted to. There's a guy sitting next to me. I wanted to just like wipe it on that guy, going, I don't have any towels. So let's just call this even. But I didn't do that.
Did Kylie laugh at you?
She just gave me a look. There's a look that all three members of my family have except for me, like, are you surprised? It was that kind of a look, like, you put barbecue sauce in your coat pocket. Did you think this isn't how your story would end? Then she just gave me that look. Doesn't have to say anything, just the look. Like, I'm not shocked.
I'm aware of that look, and thankfully there's only one of me in my house, but you have three women.
Yeah, I get that look about 4 or 5 times a day.
Why don't we just trade positions? You can go live at my house with the boys. I'll go live with the girls. Because really,
it would be easier.
It really would be easier.
Like the marriage
Except
swap
The
shows.
Lights would always be out in the kitchen.
At my I would house, fix them.
At my house,
See,
they
if
be.
I went to your house, Bill would not have. Bill wouldn't come to my house because I have a dog. So he would have to have Jim and Dylan and Michael move into your house.
Right, right, right.
And your girls and Terry would be okay with a dog.
Yeah, they like dogs.
All right, so let's do it. All right. When do we do this?
Monday, a week from today. We'll do it 1 week from today. We're going to take a break. Steve has the news. Pat McGann joins us after that. Bill and Wendy, WGN. Wendy, you know who's joined us in the studio is our friend Pat McGann. He's your friend. He's my friend. I think he's America's friend.
I have other friends, too. Yeah.
Who's your best friend?
I'm friendly.
Friend? Who is your best friend,
My best friend.
Yep. Name names.
Wait, first of all, who's your best friend in the whole wide world?
Grant Mulvey. Chicago Blackhawk great Grant Mulvey.
Is he really?
He's my best
Grant
friend.
Grant doesn't know
Does
that.
Does he know that? Yeah, right?
I've sent him some notes saying it, but he has not responded. He's probably in awe.
Yeah, that's the word.
Who is your best friend?
I don't know who my
Come
best
on,
friend
name
is.
Name names.
It's hard to pick one person. Say your wife.
Yeah. Well,
you
know,
your wife is?
No. She's not my
She's
best
not?
Friend.
Is she in the top 10?
She I is, definitely.
The,
yeah,
she cracked
she's
the
in the
top
10. She's my wife. That's enough.
Do you
That's enough
it
title.
Every Sunday?
She doesn't get to be the best friend, too.
My wife
yes,
is my second best friend after Grant Mulvey.
I mean, at the end of the day, she's probably, and I'm not a fan of that saying that, end of the day, but she's probably is my best friend. But
right.
you don't
Why are
don't
you embarrassed
say that.
To say it?
Because it's like a cliche, isn't it?
I don't think so. I think it's beautiful.
She's my best friend.
Who's her best friend?
You, Bill.
Probably
is it me.
Probably me. She better say me.
I hope it's you.
I'd be very upset if
it's,
she didn't.
It's okay to be friends.
Who's yours, Wendy?
Jim.
Yeah.
He really is.
I like
to hang with him. I mean, I always say when you find the right person, it's like the slumber party that never had to end.
Right.
You know, the next day you'd have a great slumber party with your friend and then the parents would come pick the kid up. I'm still waiting for Jim's parents to come pick him up.
Wouldn't that be
You
weird?
Guys do a lot of like light as a feather, stiff as a board stuff?
And sure.
True, no, I don't
true
trust
or false.
Him.
Like at slumber parties? A lot of Archie comic books are read out loud.
I do put his hand in the hot water.
As soon as he falls asleep?
Yeah.
That's a fun. That's never
Only when he's
out
of the hammock.
In the freezer. Yeah.
Short sheeting the bed. That's always fun. All that stuff is fun. Pat's going to be at Zanies in St. Charles this Thursday through Sunday. Zanies.com has information. And you have your own website. Things must be going
Can you
good.
Believe it?
Things must be going good, Pat
website.
McGann.
Who doesn't?
You sound like my mom. Hey, and he has his own website.
www.patmcgannncomedy.com.
Period. Period. C-O-M.
That's right. That's right. And then,
period.
You know what I'd like to... yeah. There's
I
a
thought it was in
there.
The name of it. I'm like, Pat McGann Comedy, period.
Yeah.
What?
That's a weird website. What about this White Sox podcast you're doing? That's cool.
Yeah, very excited about it. We just started it at Sox Fest end of January. It's called The Cycle.
Mm-hmm.
And it's with the White Sox, with MLB. MLB actually owns it. They own all the digital content for the baseball teams.
How'd you get that gig? That's so cool.
You know, the White Sox have been good to me. I've done a few things with them over the past few years.
You're a lifelong fan, of course, of
yes.
the White Sox.
Batty, good to you.
Big Sox fan. And we did a couple of like variety style shows with them, with the players' wives, like comedy.
Oh, yeah.
And
you taught some of the players how to do stand-up comedy, didn't you?
Not stand-up, but we did like, you know, some
comedy
sketches.
Bits,
and I did stand-up there. And we just, we did a parody video for Konerko's retirement, which was great.
I miss him so much.
Yeah, it was fun. So they're just, you know, this relationship has just kind of evolved. And we were talking about a podcast and we kind of pitched the idea to him and it's just like, it's different than a lot of baseball podcasts, and that's not like inside baseball. You know, it's not, we're breaking down stats and
you
all that.
You talk about other
so
things.
So it's exciting, you mean?
Yeah.
And it's
interesting.
It's cool. We had Frank Thomas on our first one, and, you know, he talked about how he likes watching soap operas. Which
Does he really?
Yeah. See, that to me is cool, finding out the other side of the player.
Yeah,
you know?
That's what's fun about it. And it's not just the players, it's the broadcasters, it's people that work
Ed
with the
Farmer,
team.
I love him.
Yeah, so it's been, and now that the season is starting.
Today,
and they're
going to
be
today.
Back. Yeah. They're going to be back in town. I think we'll have a lot more access to some of the players, the active players.
Oh, that's great.
We did one with Jason Benetti, the new broadcaster,
yeah,
who's going to be splitting the season with Hawk.
Yeah.
And what a great story and what a tremendous guy. And he's like, has so much just common, not like pop culture knowledge and just things. They talk about like, we were in and out of baseball, but more talking about just random stuff. He's from the South Side and how he got started, how he got this gig. And it's
And
it's
he's
fun.
Overcome a lot for people who don't know
his
story. He's overcome a lot
of things.
He has
cerebral palsy.
Yeah.
And he talks about that a lot. And he's a big advocate for people that are faced with that challenge. And
that's fantastic.
Yeah, he's awesome.
I can't wait to hear him. Yeah. I really can't.
Yeah, his voice is tremendous.
How are they deciding which games he does and which Ken Harrelson does? I don't understand the scheduling.
Yeah, so Hawk is going to do the road games.
Oh, he is.
And then I think he'll do like a lot of some of the bigger home games, like when they play the Cubs. I think he's doing opening day.
You know what's strange about that, though? Other people who have done that split season always only want to do home games. They don't want to travel.
So I guess the difference is, and you're right, because when I heard it too, I was like, the difference is his commute. So I guess Hawk lives in Indiana, and he's got like a 2-hour drive each night.
What's his address? Do you know his address?
No, I do not.
Oh, that's too bad.
I'm not sure. He lives in a nest.
He lives in a nest? Yeah. Are you sure?
Hawk.
Oh, yeah, big, I guess he would live in a nest, yeah.
In a tree.
With a can of corn.
Overlooking.
Mercy.
Overlooking I-80.
That's
unusual.
No,
I think he lives out in like Chesterton or something.
Oh, does he?
But he's got quite a drive.
Yeah.
And he's...
So he figured out mathematically it's easier to fly to Anaheim.
Right, it's easier to do the road games than to go from the hotel to the game.
And that makes a lot of sense, honestly.
Yeah, it does when you think about it. Because he was... I think he'll still be at the park, but he wanted to be there for 3-4 hours for the game. And then,
right.
You know, because if they went in the extra innings and he's getting out of there at like 11...
That gets late.
All right.
We don't want him staying up late.
Yeah. Somebody wants to know, I'm sorry I butted in, but where do we find your White Sox podcast, which is called The Cycle?
Yes, it's on iTunes. You can go to iTunes, and we'd love for people to subscribe to it, review it. And
I'll do it. I'll
we're actually doing something up until April 11th. If you do review the podcast on iTunes, you can get a chance to win a Chris Sale hat.
Excellent.
Yeah.
That's very nice. What do you make of what went on with
Adam? What do I make on the podcast?
No. I wouldn't ask you that.
That's a very forward question.
I would never ask you that. Is it more than $100 a month? It is? That's pretty good. What do you make of what happened with Adam LaRoche and his son?
And when will Drake be on your podcast?
Jeff him on.
Well, you guys just caught on to the one issue that probably...
He's not supposed to talk about it, by the way.
You're
Jerry Reinsdorf
up.
Says no talking.
Did you see Pat tear
there's
up?
A gag order on that whole thing.
No one associated with the White Sox can talk about it.
My take on it was it's good that they addressed it when they did.
Yep.
And that they're moving on from it. You
went out on a branch farther than the one that Ken Harrelson's nest is on.
Right. Right. How about it?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a kind of a weird story that
it's over, we're back.
Didn't
White
go
Sox.
Away and but, yeah, I mean, I don't know. I feel like
I heard the Mariners might pick the kid up. They might take him on as a backup. That'd be excellent. Wouldn't another team just go, "You're welcome with us.
Right,
come
exactly.
on out. We'd love to have you." Pat McGann is here. Very funny man.
He's both.
He's plural. Pat McGann is so funny. He's funny. You're funny enough for two men.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Two men in one.
He's appearing at Zanies in St. Charles this Thursday. Both Pat McGanns are. Thursday through Saturday. Zanies.com has your ticket information. More in a moment. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
You're headbanging, Bill. I've
never
seen that before.
When I hear this, I can't help but to bang my head on something. And now I have a contusion.
Oh, it's just Weezer?
Yeah, it's just Weezer. That's all.
Sorry.
That's all right. Don't apologize. Pat McGann is here, everybody. He's appearing at Zanies in St. Charles this Thursday through Sunday. Go see Pat and then do some antiquing in the area.
St. Charles is great. Bring your best friend. Bring your wife. Because my wife is my best friend.
That's right.
What did she text you during the break?
She did.
She's my best friend.
Well,
bestest.
That's how it should be.
You asked best, and I was thinking... I don't know my best friend, but
bestest friend is your wife.
Definitely.
That's how it should always be.
I didn't
be.
Know you could backpedal so well.
What are you talking about?
This segment is sponsored by Schwinn. You're backpedaling so often. We're talking baseball because today is opening day, and you're a lifelong White Sox fan. How do you think the White Sox will do? Wendy and I were just saying we're optimistic about this year's team.
Me
are
too.
You as well?
Yeah, I think they're going to score runs. That's the pitching was there last year, the starting pitching. The bullpen maybe was a little bit shaky, but I think it's going to be stronger this year. and they're going to score runs. I am optimistic, you know? I mean, I'm never a guy that's going to be like, oh, you know, they're going to win 94 games and be – but I think they're going to be very – I thought they were going to be good last year, though, so you never know. But I am more confident about this year. I think they have what a lot of teams that are successful have, that is – the intangibles and the chemistry. It sounds ridiculous, but I think it really does matter.
It could work.
I was around those 05 guys last year. They did a 10-year reunion at the Chicago Theater, and we had a show, and just being around those guys, you pick up on it. It's obvious that there is it matters, like, that you get along, you're with each other so much.
That seemed to be quite a camaraderie back then, though.
Yeah.
It's not like that now. Adam Rowan, all those, Joe Creedy, all those people.
Yeah, those guys had something special, and what I'm saying is, I think this year it's this guy Todd Frazier. Everyone that I've talked to that was down in Arizona is like, this guy is just a unifier, and he's funny, and he's like a great guy, and so just adding him in the mix.
That's
and
then an all-star third baseman.
A guy
that
like
they
Jimmy
needed.
Rollins,
yeah.
Jimmy Rollins, who's been around the league forever and won a World Series and knows how it's
and
done.
Had a great spring,
yeah,
home runs
solid
plenty.
Spring,
yeah.
And I just think, you know, once they, if you get off, it's momentum too in baseball. If you get off to a nice start, and then it kind of snowballs from there. So,
right.
Yeah,
right,
I'm optimistic. Right. It should be fun.
It's always nice opening day. I know it's cliche, and everybody who's ever been around baseball always says it, but every team, all 30 teams, have the belief this could work. You know, you don't know because you haven't seen anything yet, but there is some sort of exuberance about opening day.
Yeah, except, you know.
Except
the Expos.
Well, except the Montreal Expos.
They have no chance.
Right. I always like how most stadiums, or stadia, if you're saying
stadia.
A proper stadia.
Stadia, really?
More than one stadium
you
is a stadia.
Latin.
Yeah,
is it really?
Yeah, it is. So around the league, on opening day, it's a jam-packed full house. You can't get a seat no matter what you do. But if you go the second day, there's plenty of open seats.
Right. Yeah, that's usually the case.
That's totally on the south side.
But for the south side this year, the Friday opener is going to help, because it's like they're kind of selling it as opening weekend.
Right.
So you have...
Kicking it off, baby.
Right.
Because last, you know, sometimes, like today in Oakland, it's Monday. Game two,
isn't
Tuesday.
It Monday here, too?
Yeah, it is. But there's
a
time difference. There is a time difference,
right.
Wendy.
And
right.
I'm sorry if I said Adam, I meant Aaron Rowan.
Later tonight, it won't be. Later tonight, it'll be Tuesday.
That's
here.
That's so true.
And it'll be Monday.
Not till after
there.
Midnight.
Yeah, but... But just saying.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
See, this is why you're not my best friend. Calling me out.
And, you know, you
The thing is, the Sox being Friday opener is my point.
Right.
The second game's Saturday, so I think
they'll have a nice
weekend. They should have a nice weekend.
It sounds like the White Sox have the ability to time travel based on what you just said, but they don't,
they do.
Do they?
No,
are they the
don't.
Only team in the American League who can time travel? Yeah, that's excellent.
They may or may not.
That's great. What about the summer? Are you looking forward to some warm weather in the summer, Pat? What comes up for you? What do you have planned for the warm weather?
You know,
these are great questions, yeah. Will.
Well, I know who his best friend is. And
bring
his
the
best
slip and slide
friend.
Out front, and
yep,
you know, just enjoy.
A lemonade
I love the warm
stand?
Weather. Warm weather is not stand? Great for comedy, though. Comedy is at its best, and you know,
when
more,
it's cold
more
and
people,
miserable.
Yeah, more people come out.
Yeah,
to the clubs and the shows.
Do you have outdoor venues for comedy? Because that's an idea.
You never want to do it outdoors.
Yeah, it's really, that's hard.
Like fests and stuff is
the worst.
People could eat food on a stick while watching you. That wouldn't work.
People eating too, terrible.
Well, in a club, there's no distraction. They understand you got to face
captive
forward
audience.
And watch. Yeah, yeah, but outside,
I've done it. I've done shows at under horrible circumstances.
You should do it on a plane.
I did a show at like a May crowning event or something.
Oh,
for
that's fun.
The Immaculate Mary out in Des Plaines, and it was like my dad got me the gig from his barber.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. And he's like, I think I got you a gig. I've been doing stand up for like a month, and he's like, I think I got you a gig. And I go out and like the whole,
barber.
No one there even spoke English. They all spoke Italian.
Oh, wow.
And it was, I killed. I absolutely crushed it.
Buongiorno.
Yeah, so that was a bunch of bad circumstances. It was outside. They were eating. They didn't speak English.
Oh, wow.
And they had a DJ, and he never left the stage. He just kind of stood behind me.
For what reason? Any reason?
I don't know. I think
back up.
Thought I was going to steal the stuff or something.
You never knew when you needed some sound effect or something.
Yeah, right.
He could have helped
you
out.
Well, and you still to this day, I know you tour with him. You work with him.
Yeah, he's my guy. He's my best friend.
He's always good.
Love that guy.
I've done a show where they told me a couple minutes into the show, I was doing, this is years and years ago, I was working outside, and then somebody came up on stage, a guy, a very official looking guy, and he called me over and he whispered in my ear that that was enough comedy, I would be hosting a lip sync contest at that point.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, about seriously?
About 7 minutes in. Yeah.
I love how you describe him. Very official
well,
looking guy.
Well, he looked like, normally I would have called security and go, there's a scary looking guy, but he looked like somebody who
was in charge.
Yeah, so I just he just explained. He goes, "I think we've seen enough. Well, right. Let's do a lip sync contest."
Oh, that's hilarious!
So
I jokingly
those are the ones you remember.
Yep,
right. I jokingly mentioned doing stand up on a plane. That's happened.
Yeah, Southwest Airlines years and years ago used to have
right.
on short flights like from Chicago to Detroit or Chicago to St. Louis, somebody would come up and do 20 minutes of stand up on the flight.
And now they just have their flight crew do it.
Absolutely, they
because
really
they're
do.
Really good.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, they're good.
They're not.
They are funny. They have a sense of humor.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's what you want when you could possibly die in the air, you right. know, because I'm not a good flyer.
Leave on a laugh.
You don't like to fly, huh?
I'm getting better. You know, when you bring the kids with, you have to put on your brave face for them, and they're fine with flying, so I guess I'm all right now.
Yeah.
But it's still weird how that thing stays up there.
It's a like frequency for me. Like, if I'm flying a lot, like...
Then you get used to it.
Yeah, but then if I go for, like... 3-4 months without, then I'm like, you know.
Then it gets
I'm not a fan of the turbulence.
No,
but
you have to ask them nicely. Could we have a flight without turbulence? They'll provide no turbulence for you if you want. If you
I just flew. I was in Phoenix this weekend for a gig, and the people that were like on the flight before me, I guess, because they were asking us at the gate. This woman asked us how the flight was, and they said the last flight was like the drink cart went.
Oh, great.
That makes me so nervous. I white knuckle it. I grab like my armrest because it's weird.
The guy next to me flying home yesterday was praying.
Was
really?
He really?
Out loud?
No, not out loud, but you know. And he was like, I sat next to a real tall guy, which was, he was really in my space, which is not funny.
Yeah.
He went wide, like his leg was over by me. Yeah.
You should fly your own plane, Pat. I think you've achieved enough
thought about it
in your career where you just get
Once
your own
Once this
plane.
Podcast gets going, I'm,
then
I'm,
you'll
I'm
have a jumbo jet.
About, I'm talk to them about a charter.
Can't That'll your be nice dad's one. Barber get you a plane?
Think about it.
So consider I'll ask you guys. You guys are great interviewers. I think, you know, I've been on your show a lot of times. Now that I'm doing this podcast, what's the biggest tip you give someone just for interviewing? And don't say listen. I've heard that.
Oh, one. For interviewing?
Yeah.
I learned this from Bobby Skafish. Have a couple of questions ready to roll that you want to ask them in case you get like yes or no answers, so you're prepared. But just listen to them and ask, like build on what they've just said. Like when you said Frank Thomas liked soap operas, how did that come out? And then it's probably just when you were having a conversation, correct?
Sure. Yeah.
That's the best way to interview someone.
Yeah.
That's right. I'm in the same boat. Don't interview anybody. Have a conversation with
just
somebody.
Just talk to them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That would work better. Like a good question would not be, what are you going to do this summer?
Right. Like I was going to
never ask that. Who's your best friend? I would never ask a question like that. That's a waste of time.
Well, that's good if you're talking to a fourth grader, I think.
Right.
Who's your best friend?
Right.
What's your favorite color?
Interview a lot of fourth graders. You can't go wrong. Pat McGann, everybody, will be at Zanies in St. Charles this Thursday through Sunday. Zanies.com has the information. And then his podcast, The Cycle, you want to go to WhiteSox.com to find The Cycle. And then the first ones are already up? Or they're
and you can
up.
Go to iTunes, and we're
it's
dropping
free.
Them every week. It's free, yeah. Download it. They're fun. And we got this weekend, we got Johnny Resnick, the singer from the Goo Goo Dolls.
Goo Goo Dolls.
He's singing the anthem at the opener. We're going to have him on the podcast. And we're going to have Darius Fleming. He's linebacker for the Patriots who went to St. Rita High School.
That's great.
He saved a woman's life right before the, I think, the AFC Championship game. He got a woman out of a burning car.
Oh, my
God. Ask him
Chicago
about that.
Guy. Went
my
to
advice,
game.
Ask him about that.
We got him. Oh, yeah. I'm going to ask him about
that.
Ask
him if the girl is now his
find
best
out what
friend.
He's, I'm going to find out what he's doing this summer.
See what he's got going this summer, Pat. Why not?
Like?
All right. News is next.
PatMcGannComedy.com.
That's how you do it. We'll be right back. Bill and Wendy, WGN. Steve, thanks so much. It's Bill F. and it's Wendy Snyder. If you want to be part of the show, why not? 312-981-7200. You can call us there. You can text us there. I don't know. Wendy, I've not asked you this. Are you planning on attending the Republican National Convention in Cleveland, Ohio later this year?
What part of that do you think I would want to attend?
Well, first of all, just to be in Cleveland, Ohio in July is fantastic. It's romantic.
Although I do want to see the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
This might be your opportunity. For you or anybody else who's planning on being there in the summer in the city, in July. Here's a novel idea. Why stay at a hotel or a bed and breakfast? You can stay at Jeffrey Dahmer's house.
I have so many questions about this.
Doesn't it sound fantastic?
Why is that house still standing, first off?
That's a good question. I wonder why it's still standing.
You'd think they would have raised that.
Yeah. I would have thought that they would have gotten rid of Jeffrey Dahmer's house, but they have not. It's still there. The Ohio childhood home of serial killer Jeffrey Dahmer is available for rent just in time for the Republican National Convention this summer. It could have been had for $8,000 a month.
That's high.
Isn't that a lot of money?
That's in Cleveland? A lot.
I know.
Like in L.A.? If Dahmer lived in L.A., I could see that.
That's even high. That's high in Los Angeles, $8,000 a month. It's not that great of a house. I've seen pictures of it. Plus, there's some history.
But now this is the house that he was, it's his childhood home. He didn't move from it, right? He still remained.
Well, he lived in Wisconsin, of course, and that's where he committed most of his crimes.
Okay, yeah.
But
well,
his first one was committed there in the house, I believe. I'll get to that. You could have had it for $8,000 a month. That was until Friday afternoon. But as of Friday, the price went up because of references to the infamous criminal.
So people pay more to live
once
in that
they
house?
Found out it was Jeffrey Dahmer's house.
What
you're
is wrong
more.
With people?
I don't know. I don't know. The home where Dahmer grew up and in 1978 committed his first murder in Bath, Ohio. That's 26 miles south of Cleveland. That's where the convention is scheduled to be in July. The listing on a real estate company website initially included a reference to Dahmer, but then on Friday that was removed, and the price has since been increased to $10,000 per month. So nobody was renting it at $8,000. So they raised it.
They should have raised it.
I know. They should have. Dahmer, as you know, was convicted in 1992 in the murder and dismemberment of 17 boys and men, some of whom he consumed over a period of 14 years. He was beaten to death in 1994 by another prison inmate while serving 15 life terms. That was in Wisconsin, where most of the murders took place after he moved there.
I have another question.
Sure.
Why wasn't he in solitary? Because you knew somebody was going to go after him. Is that why?
I don't know. I'm trying to remember exactly what the reasoning was. I'm trying to remember who I just had this conversation with. But if I was in prison, and I will be eventually, I would much rather be...
You will never make it in prison because you won't eat the food there.
That I would actually... That would keep me out of prison. Is the food
that's your only inspiration.
Not up to par.
You won't eat
me.
My food or right. prison food. But right. anybody else's, yes.
And they don't let you have... you can't order in prison. You can't call up and go, I really have a taste for Thai food. Could you just bring me some lime chicken? They won't do that.
You'd have the guards beating you up.
You know, there'd be a line of people. If I were in prison, I would choose... I would choose solitary confinement.
Well, you can't choose it.
Could you request it?
No,
you ask
it's not
nicely?
Like you're not making reservations. I'd like a adjoining room.
I need
with a
room
hot girl
with a view of the lagoon, if you could. And I would like.
Do all prisons have lagoons?
Most prisons have a lagoon. I just think it would be better for me at that point to be away from the general population of a prison because of things like this. Because some of the prisoners would not get along with me, and I would rather just be on my own. Now,
they might have a ping pong table there.
Boy, that's tempting.
But
man.
Bad food.
That would be right. Food is awful.
God knows what they put in it.
There's
a dog running around, too.
They don't have dogs in prison. The listing by Howard Hanna, the official real estate broker for the convention, has been up since February and initially included the fact that the three-bedroom, two-bathroom, 2,170-square-foot home was once occupied by Jeffrey Dahmer. It had described the house as, I quote here, mid-century modern home with true park-like setting. Smoking and animals are okay.
Smoking animals?
That smoking monkey?
Yeah.
I have to think if you allow a tenant, to dismember people and eat them in the house, smoking and animals are probably also okay.
Right.
Your threshold for what can go on within the confines of that house is probably pretty low if you go, past tenants have eaten people here, so if you have a schnauzer, that's fine.
I would only rent it to vegetarians.
Right. To avoid
right.
To avoid the same thing
it
happening
twice.
It
could be the house. Bad juju.
Right. What luck do I have? You're the second tenant I've had eating guests. This is terrible. This is Jeffrey Dahmer's childhood home, it said in the ad, close to Cayuga Valley National Park. I like the way they just slipped that in. It's close to amenities, and it also used to be the home of Jeffrey Dahmer. They just throw that in really quickly. It's near Montrose Shopping. It has easy access to the I-77 highway.
When you want to escape
right,
from the police.
Right. At the first time you hear a siren, please, you'll get on the I-77 and head west. By Friday afternoon, however, the Dahmer sentence had been removed. They took that out. So they took that out and they raised the price.
But it was too late. Everybody knew.
Did they think that was holding back potential renters? Was that?
Well,
it would be too, but then you throw on the price. Like for me, the price is secondary to the fact that a guy killed and ate somebody in the house. But the price is outrageous. I would complain about that too. I go, by the way.
All right, what if it was $500 a month? Would you? I'll take it.
I know there's thrill seekers that go.
Not to live in it, though.
I'm in a haunted house. I know there's people who would find that interesting. I'm not one of them.
I'd like it on a tour.
Yeah.
For somebody to point it out.
Right.
And seriously, and
right.
I'm not, I would want to see it.
That would be all right.
I wouldn't want to go in it.
No.
Let alone
sleep over
there.
In there. Uh-uh.
Bob has a comment. Hi, Bob.
Hi, Wendy and Bill.
Hi, Bob. What's going on?
With you guys. Well, back when all this was occurring, there was an old joke that had come out. Jeffrey Dahmer's apartment is for rent with roommate. Some assembly required.
That's not funny.
I know, it's tasteless.
That's awful.
I told your guy that.
Well, then he put it right through.
Kevin said it was relevant and funny.
He fast-tracked it.
It was relevant. As soon as I heard you guys talking about it, I couldn't believe it. I said, oh, my gosh, I've never had a joke set up so well in my life.
Well, thank you, Bob. Thank you very much.
Thank you, guys. Love you.
Take care.
Thank
you.
We love you, too. Should we take a break? We have a retired sheriff who wants to tell us about the solitary issue.
Absolutely.
And maybe you can make reservations.
Yeah, if that's what's required. All right, more of this sort of behavior next. 312-981-7200 if you want to jump in. Bill and Wendy, WGN. All right, if you were not listening, I will quickly catch you up. It turns out if you're attending the Republican National Convention in Cleveland, Ohio over the summer, you can rent Jeffrey Dahmer's childhood home. He lived there for years and years and years. His first murder was actually committed in this house. You can live there for a month. They'll rent it to you. The price was $8,000 a month. That was until Friday. They were running a special. Now it's $10,000 a month to live in Jeffrey Dahmer's house. I'm not interested.
And we said that you would have to stay out of prison. What inspires you is the bad food.
Right. Right. But if I had to go to jail, if I had to go to prison, I would opt for solitary confinement. I would not want to be in with other prisoners.
General population.
Yeah, I don't want that.
Well, retired Sheriff Dave is on the line. Hi, retired Sheriff Dave.
Hey, good morning, Bill and Wendy. You both look lovely today.
Thank you, Dave. You do too. Thank you. Can I request that when I'm signing in at prison? Can I say I want to be by myself?
No, you really can't because it's not your house anymore. I mean, you're living under our rules, so to speak. So you don't really get to choose. And ask any prison administrator or jail commander, and it is really a tough business because imagine, okay, everybody knows Jeffrey Dahmer, but there are countless people whose names you don't know who have committed, you know, horrendous crimes, and they're all at risk. And what a jail commander has to do, in Jeffrey Dahmer's case, for instance, you talk about solitary confinement. But remember, he's going to be in there for years. And if you take somebody away from all human contact, first of all, he's starting out nuts, obviously.
Yeah.
But that is really going to degrade his mental state. He's going to be harder to handle, and you're really going to drive him bonkers. So. He then, and as you probably would understand, jails and prisons are lawsuit factories. These guys really have nothing to do. And so they are looking for any opportunity to either just plain abuse the system. Mm-hmm. Some of them will just write frivolous lawsuits just to tie up the courts. They will look for any opportunity to make any compensation, even if they're just being problematic. Sometimes they just get money to shut up and, you know, move along. It's a nuisance. So if he were to be placed in solitary, he could then have an excuse to say, hey, listen, this is cruel and unusual, tie up the courts, looking for compensation. So what they will try and do is place a guy like that, who more or less everybody hates, with others who pretty much everybody hates. That's why in virtually every jail that I know of, you have to keep the child molesters together. You have to keep sex offenders together, because the general population in a jail or prison really hates those guys and would want to do them harm. So
I love that these murderers and torturers have morals.
There's a hierarchy.
Right.
And the lowest rung is child molesters, right? In prison, that's the lowest yeah. of the low.
Yep.
And somebody said Jeffrey Dahmer refused protected custody and wanted to be in the general population.
Oh, really?
Huh.
Could be. And then you also have to consider that if a prison administrator says, well, we have to do this to protect him, then that's exposing them to lawsuits, because then somebody could say, well, what do you mean? You don't have adequate protection. You don't have adequate staff, which most don't. I mean, it's really a very tough business, because people like to believe that people evaporate once they go to prison and jail.
Sure.
But, you know, it's a small city, and you have to provide the same things that any other city, you know, you have food, clothing, shelter, you know, there's.
Yeah, but I don't understand how they get to work out and have access to a library. I mean.
Well, again, Wendy, that is really for the benefit of the staff, because unless you keep an inmate or a prisoner occupied.
Yeah, I guess.
They're going to do something, and you want to keep them occupied and make their behavior manageable.
That makes a lot of sense, Dave, that you pointed that out. How long have you been retired?
They threw me out at the end of 2014. I'm kidding. In Indiana, we have term limits. So I served my my second consecutive term, so I had to leave.
Do you miss it?
You know, I do. I do miss a lot of it, especially the people. I mean, I had a great staff, great people here in Porter County, which, as you know, is over in Valparaiso,
mm-hmm.
and great people. Some of the problems, no, I don't miss. But I had a great community and great employees, and yeah, that part I miss.
Well, thanks for calling in. We appreciate talking to you, Dave.
Oh, I'll probably do it again someday.
We'll probably answer.
We'll see you in there.
Thank you so
much.
In the
big house.
I'm not going to the big house. I like my little house.
They always say in movies that on your first day, you want to go after the toughest guy to make a statement. So do that when you're in there.
All right. First of all, I'm not listening to your advice ever.
They say that. I've seen them do that in movies.
I don't care who they
are. Go after the biggest guy.
Hey, Ron.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. Were you in jail?
No. No, I wasn't, but I live in Wisconsin, and, you know,
that's not jail.
I was telling your producer, Screener, that when Dahmer was tried, that was one of the first trials that was on court TV. I believe it was back in 91.
Yeah.
So
this was after OJ, of course, being the first trial.
Well, and plus, what he did was, you know, obviously horrendous.
Yeah.
But there's a couple of things. He didn't eat the first guy. Although he did dismember him, put him in trash bags, had him in the back seat, got pulled over on his way to the dump to dump this guy.
That's right.
And the officer asked him, what's in there? And he said, I'm going to the dump. And you think back to that, and you think, if the officer had only inspected a little bit more, none of it would have happened.
True.
But to the point about him in prison and getting killed, yeah, he was in solitary confinement. In fact, he was there with another guy named Jesse Anderson, who killed his wife in Milwaukee, and nobody had known that he did kill his wife. He blamed it on, he said, some African-Americans had attacked his wife and killed her. He was found to have killed her. He was in prison, so he was in solitary because he wasn't, you know, very popular with the African-American population because of what he had done.
Right.
they were both cleaning. And
that's right.
There was a guy who was a million years old, according to him. He was obviously a pretty whacked out prisoner.
Yeah.
And the guards just happened to not be around when these guys were cleaning, and they were in solitary, and this whacked out million year old guy, who was Jesus, I guess, according to him, he beat them both to death.
Wow.
And after he beat them to death, then the guards realized, oh, wait a minute, nobody's watching Jesse and nobody's watching Jeffrey.
Wow.
Oh, they're dead. Oh, damn.
So obviously Jeffrey Dahmer and Jesse's family had every right to sue the prison for not keeping an eye on them.
Well, that would have been a lot of balls to do that. And I don't know what happened there. They may very well have sued, but you know, Jeffrey Dahmer's mom and his dad they did stick by him in the trial, but obviously just, you know, wanted the whole thing to be over,
right.
And now it was over, and yeah. So anyway, he was in solitary. So Anderson was in solitary, and they got beaten to death by a guy who thought he was Jesus Christ and a million years old. So
that's a great way to start your Monday, Ron. Thanks for the details we missed.
Have a good day.
You too.
Thanks, Ron. All right, let's take a quick break. Kim Gordon has the news, and then more show. Eric Zorn will join us after the news. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
All right, I love this.
I can't remember this guy's name. He's Russian, right, Kevin? Mr. Somebody.
Isn't it the little guy on The Price is Right who climbed up the little...
No, it's not that guy.
You know what I'm talking
about? Yeah, I know that guy. The feisty Eric Zorn joins us right now. He does every Monday to talk about stuff. Hi, Eric. Welcome back. You were away last week. Marie Schmeek filled in.
I was away, and that's why we played this music, because it's what I am so happy to be back home, I think, is the Russian translation.
I think this should be your theme. This and Feisty. This is it.
It's very jolly, and I'm back after a week's absence. I did hear, Marie Schmeek, I'm a faithful listener to your podcast.
Oh, thank you for that.
And your readers, who for some weird reason might have to miss some of your show for something stupid like work or family obligations, you can catch up on all the segments plus the full show.
Well, yeah, that's nice.
Sometimes you want to listen to both. You want to hear the whole show, and then you want to go back and listen to the segments, you know, to see how they fit in. But whatever.
WGNRadio.com or TuneIn app or get the WGN.
It's on
app.
iTunes. I get mine through iTunes.
Oh, that's nice of you.
I was out in San Francisco listening to you guys talk to Marie Schmeek last week.
Yeah.
I wasn't here.
Oh, you weren't? That's right. It was.
Didn't
it was
you notice Judy I was Pilak, very quiet?
Yeah. Judy, yes. No, you were very quiet. No, that's right. It was Judy. But
on your flight back, you were on the airplane with somebody of some renown.
Yeah, I was walking through coach class, getting ready to find my seat, and I walked by Governor Rauner.
Oh, how about that?
He was in row 10, and like we were in row 20. And I just walked by, and I caught his eye. And he
punched him in the arm?
He nodded at me. I nodded at him, I don't know. I'm not sure he recognized me. I was kind of out of context, you know, on a plane coming from LA to Chicago. But he's so recognizable. He's just a very distinctive looking guy.
Was he smiling as usual?
No, I was like, hey, you flying back?
Yeah.
Did you do Nux?
No, I didn't. It was like totally out of nowhere, you know, where you're just like walking down the aisle on the plane. And I was thinking, I really kind of wanted to talk to him. And I was thinking, well, I'll talk to him about baggage claim, but of course he was long gone by the time I don't think he checked his bags. But,
oh, he can't check. He's not going to just sit there and wait for his bags to be
coach.
A target.
Doesn't that impress you that he's in coach, or do you think that's just an affectation?
I think if somebody saw him in first class now with our budget not being approved,
there'd
he
be
would
criticism.
Get, yeah.
I seriously doubt he was on state business.
My
guess is that he was probably out there visiting one of his houses or something.
Oh, maybe.
I didn't see any bodyguards around him or anything like that. It was just one of the, it reminded me, I flew back from Boston once with Rod Blagojevich in coach.
Yeah.
And of course Blagojevich was chatting up everybody. It looked like Rauner was just kind of sitting there minding his own business. And nobody was giving him any attention particularly. When I flew back with Blagojevich, he was glad handing people and standing up. And then the flight attendant came back and said, you know, Governor, we're upgrading you to first class. And he said, oh, no, not me. I'm not going to go to first class. I'm going to be back here with my people. And it was classic Blagojevich, the difference between
Wouldn't you
two.
Have criticized Rauner, though, if he was sitting in first class? Even though even though as
I would
we just
expect
said,
it.
I was actually surprised. I was surprised, maybe even pleasantly surprised that he was back in coach. Although you think about it, the guy's worth so much money. He made what, $60 million, or makes that about per year. And you think, and he's a tall man too. Mm-hmm. You think he would like the little extra leg room? He wasn't even in one of those like exit rows or something. You'd think like maybe they put him in a special.
No, that's
row.
The pressure. You don't want to sit in an exit row. Too much pressure.
There is.
I think he's got enough pressure going on. But this brings the question I have is: have you ever walked by on an airplane going and walked by somebody famous or sat near somebody famous on an airplane?
Well, Wendy already knows this, but on a flight again to Los Angeles in December, there were two guys that had been on The Amazing Race last season, and they were so obnoxious for the whole flight, just nonstop obnoxious. They kept mentioning the fact they were on Amazing Race. Like if the flight attendant came by and asked for something to drink, the one guy go, "We should have a Sprite like we did when we were on The Amazing Race." Like they just kept saying that they were on The Amazing Race over and over and over.
We're buckling up our seatbelts just like we did.
Just
on the
like
Amazing.
We weren't allowed to on
We've
The Amazing Race.
We've
got to
put our tray tables back up.
Yeah, they were just they wanted all the spotlight to be on them. And collectively, the rest of the airplane all looked at each other and we went, "We don't care that you're on The Amazing Race."
And the number of people who do care is going to diminish slowly time to the point that in a few years you'll mention it and people go, what was that show again? Yeah, no, I didn't see that. So
my brush with greatness on a plane and at baggage check when I was going to L.A. to see one of my friends, Billy Deck was on the plane.
Was he?
He shows up
He's in a lot
everywhere.
Of places. There's more than one Billy Deck, I think.
He's got body doubles.
There's a couple of Billy Decks.
Where'd you just see him?
He was on The People versus O.J. Simpson last week.
As an expert.
Yeah,
of some
he played
sort.
The role of expert.
And in Amy Schumer's train wreck, I noticed him.
He was in there, too.
Yeah, he was like a bartender, and then he was in two scenes. Totally recognized him, and then, he was on my flight.
So do you, when you see somebody like that on a plane, you walk by him, or you sit near him, do you talk to
him?
Hey,
Billy, that's what I did, and I walked by. And then I talked to him at baggage check.
That's where I had an incident with Mike Singletary, a very pleasant incident years ago.
Very low voice.
Mike Singletary? Oh, yeah. And big eyes, huge eyes. And then he tackled me for
I'm
no
Samurai
reason.
Samurai Mike.
So I had that situation with him, an actress from All My Children that I recognize, Taylor Miller. But she
Nina?
Knows, but she knows my wife. So that one... That actually played out well.
So you didn't,
she recognized my wife.
Feel like a fanboy going,
Yeah, well,
Nina.
I still did that. I found a way to make
it
that happen.
It was Nina, for God's sake.
Right.
You were going to come off like Chris Farley on the Saturday Night Live sketch. Yes. Like, hey, you're Mike Singletary. What's that like?
Well, my brother, years ago in Las Vegas, we were kids, and we went to the MGM Grand in Las Vegas, and my brother gets on an elevator, and then Dinah Shore got on a floor after him. So my brother just pointed at her the whole way down, and then at the bottom when they got off, he just went, "You're Dinah Shore," and then got off the elevator.
That's sweet, though, and she's used to that.
But she knew she was Dinah Shore.
It's cute, Bill.
I guess so.
What would you say? I wouldn't – if I sat near somebody – if I were sitting near somebody who was famous, I would think that most people who are famous don't want to be recognized or talked to in airplanes. It's such a confined – You can't like sign an autograph and the person will go away or something. You're there for, an hour, two, three, in this case, 4 hours. Do you want someone next to you going, I mean, what if he sits next to, some drunk on the airplane?
Right.
Like, "Governor, here's what you should do.
I'll fix the budget for you.
I got a spreadsheet for you."
"I got your budget right here.
Put that book away. I gotta."
Right. That makes for an enjoyable trip.
I hate that. So.
You should acknowledge them, though, and just kind of go, "Big fan," or "Hey, how's it going?" I think it's respectful to acknowledge that you know who they are and that you're leaving them alone.
Oh, there. Yeah, you can score some points doing
that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Governor Rauner, I'll be sitting over there and leaving you completely alone, sir.
I will not come by to harass you.
Not even once.
Eric, have you met him on numerous occasions? Because you're in the studio every week, and I don't think I'd recognize you on the street. If you're out of your element,
you wouldn't recognize Eric on the street.
I guess I would. But you know how when you see people not in their element, it doesn't, like you mentioned when you see teachers, Bill.
Yeah, it's always weird.
Yeah, like you see them at a grocery store and you're like,
"What, they eat food?"
Well, it's like, I know that face, but where do I know it from?
Yeah, well, I think, I'm guessing that's probably how Rauner reacted when he saw me. I've seen him a couple times in the Tribune editorial board sessions. And my little face is in the paper. I don't know if he probably
your face
has
is bigger in real
blown
life,
up,
oddly
blown
enough.
Up to be a dartboard. There's a lot of things I've written about it. So I don't know. And someone who's in his position, obviously, even when he was in business and also in government, he meets so many
of
people.
Of course.
So it's always weird to,
Yep.
I mean, so to come up to him and say, "Hey, remember me? And I've written those columns about you where I counted the times you dropped all your G's. And
oh, yeah.
That'd be funny.
He would love that.
Failed governor, yeah.
Eric Zorn is here, everybody, from your Chicago Tribune. If you'd like to jump in, 312-981-7200. More show coming your way next. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. The feisty Eric Zorn joins us to talk about things, as he does every Monday. He writes for the Chicago Tribune. You made an interesting statement not a moment or two ago. Trump is going down, you said.
Looks like Trump stop me if you've heard this before.
Uh-oh.
But Donald Trump has said and done some things recently that is going to cost him a great deal of support.
Wait, you don't think women who get an abortion should be punished? You don't think so?
Well,
he's backpedaled
on
that.
He took that back, Bill.
You can't take stuff back.
No,
you can't.
Well, what you can't take back is the fact that you're not prepared. You haven't thought these issues through. And it wasn't a gaffe in that you would say something that you don't mean or that you inadvertently say something that you truly believe. It was a gaffe that he hadn't thought about that question at all. And you could see, as Chris Matthews, and for anyone who missed this last week, Chris Matthews from MSNBC is grilling Trump about the question of should women be punished if they have an abortion, if abortion is made illegal. And, you know, you could just see, like, there's this panic in his expression and behind his eyes. He's like, I haven't thought about this. I don't even, this has never occurred to me.
Yeah.
And so he's like, he's trying to do the thing that you would do if you're a third grader or writing an essay about To Kill a Mockingbird,
right,
or something like that.
Just stalling. Okay, kind of stuff.
But he turned it around on Chris Matthews then about what are your beliefs, and, you know, you're Catholic, I'm sure you, and Chris Matthews says, you know, morally, I'm against it, but I don't think it should be a legal issue. And it's like, who cares what Chris Matthews thinks?
Right, but Chris Matthews, to his credit, held his feet to the fire and made him answer the question. And ultimately, Trump said, well, yeah, I think women should be punished for having an abortion, and if it's made illegal, and then of course this creates a firestorm on both sides because the anti-abortion people don't want that to be said, and obviously the people who are pro-abortion rights don't want that to happen. So he alienated both sides, but again, I think the real crime there was just this fact that there are these major issues in public life that he hasn't really thought through very carefully. I would say the same thing is true of his idea that we should give nukes to South Korea and Japan and let them defend themselves rather than put them under our nuclear umbrella. This has been, again, one of those things that's been widely criticized on both sides. And he had this thing with his campaign manager,
Lewandowski,
who was charged with assault for grabbing this, or was it battery? A minor battery? I guess a battery it would be. He grabbed this
Breitbart reporter,
and yanked on her arm, and which to me seems like part of what happens when you're in the scrum of a reporter. I think it was.
Anna DeVlanta says. Sometimes it gets kind of crazy, and, you know, but still, Corey Lewandowski shouldn't be the one to do it. Maybe someone else related to the.
He shouldn't be, and Trump's instinct, of course, was to deny that it happened and to say that this woman was making it up.
Right.
And then he was saying, well, maybe she was attacking me with a bomb that looked like a pen. And
yeah, right. Definitely.
But anyway, he's having a lot of trouble in Wisconsin connecting. He sent Sarah Palin up there to do.
And that did not go well.
That was a complete bust.
Right.
Who thought that would have gone well?
Well, whoever would have thought it would have gone. Whoever thought Sarah Palin was going to go well.
Trump was actually going, really? I don't need your help. Thank you.
I would think, well, he had that one thing, was before the Iowa caucuses where she came out and spoke, and then she's up there prattling away, and in the background Trump was looking like, oh my goodness, what's going on here? You think that they would have just sent her back to Alaska, but she's in Wisconsin. She did really poorly. I guess all the radio talk show hosts have turned on him in Wisconsin because he has been criticizing Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker, who is very popular with Republicans in Wisconsin. He's got 80% approval ratings up there, and Trump has been, to his credit, he's been making some fair criticisms of what Governor Walker has done up there. Wisconsin has not been a model of great performance of Republican ideals,
right.
But you're criticizing a guy who's really popular up there. So the latest polls that I've seen have shown Cruz with a significant lead up in Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
And if Cruz beats Trump well in Wisconsin, he's going to not only make it really hard to impossible for Trump to get to his magic number
1237
is that the number? I should have it tattooed somewhere. but to get to that delegate number that he needs, But it's also going to really cut into the momentum and the inevitability factor. So that we've got the Pennsylvania primary coming up, the New York primary coming up. Those are two major things coming up in the next couple weeks. Right now, Trump has got big leads in both places, but those leads could easily crumble if a major defeat tomorrow, which I expect, causes voters to rethink him.
Somebody is confirming what you said, 312. Trump is losing credibility. It sure seems like it. But I'm ignoring all this until I vote in November.
But isn't it preposterous to think that he's losing credibility now? After all,
no, it's preposterous to think that he had credibility to lose. Yes. That's the part that's preposterous.
But this is why, when we're saying, like, okay, now he's done it. I mean, in walks Steve Bertrand, who is my fellow panelist on the Mincing Rascals every week. And how many times, Steve, have we said, okay, this is it. Donald Trump has gone too far. He's lost his support.
Every week.
Every week. Just about every week.
There was something every week, absolutely.
You think, well,
but this has finally hit home with some people.
It really seems to have. I mean, we'll see tomorrow.
And we're getting all these texts, you know, abortion, if made illegal again, is murder. Don't you think they should be punished for murdering someone? Duh. It's just really...
It's a really tough question for people who want to make abortion illegal to deal with, actually.
But both sides, you're right. He's finally done it.
He's finally done it. And, you know, and abortion politics, I think, are going to be fairly important this year because of the Supreme Court issue, which is going to be looming over this election. So,
Eric, thank you. Appreciate it. We will see you next Monday. Steve Bertrand is here, and we'll talk about what he has coming up next. It's Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder on WGN.
Bernie Sanders, bring me a dream. Make it the strongest that I've ever seen. The middle class will stop bending over, and that's when all their lonesome nights are over. Sanders, I'm so alone. Don't have a country to call my own. Please turn on your magic beam. Bernie Sanders, bring me Audrey.
This is a Chicago group called Babylon 5. Three girls who sing, as you've heard, like the Andrews Sisters. They've tailored the lyrics a little bit to salute Bernie Sanders. They were in town last week. I didn't know that.
I was just going to say, let's get them in.
I sent a note to one of the girls in the band saying, because I heard this and then other songs that they do. Some of them exactly the way they were done in the 40s. Some of them updated for today's music. They left on tour this week. They're all over the country.
I love
them.
They'll
be back in during the summer, and they've assured us that they'll have a time for us and be on the show with us in the summer.
That was gorgeous. The only thing is that I thought it was bum, 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 but they were saying bung, 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 and I want to be a bung, bung, bung girl. I would like to guess bung.
You can fill out an application to be one of those people. I can't guarantee anything, but you could certainly fill out an application. But they sound so good. They really do. And they dress up like it's the 1940s. They've got, I don't know what it is about me. Are you the same way? I marvel at that Andrews Sistery kind of music. I love that stuff.
It was pretty cool, and I would like to hear them do contemporary songs like that.
They do a bit of that. They do a bit of that. There's a couple of bands out there. Kevin, do you remember the name?
Rock was one, Acapella.
That's one. Who's the other band? Kevin, remember I played you a couple of snippets of this band? I can't think of their name.
Yeah.
But they take modern songs and they 40-ize them. It sounds like it's the 1940s.
Oh,
and I love that stuff.
You've been playing it
in the office.
And there's a clown in the video?
No, that's a separate one.
That's Bill's private video.
Sorry for that.
He likes clowns.
That's this clown that looks like a sad clown who comes out and sings modern-day songs, but again, he sings them in a very morose, sad kind of a way.
That's totally lifted from
Baskets.
Is it called
Puddle's Pity Party or something like that, I think? I think he's called Puddle's.
If it's not, it should be.
I think he's called Puddle's Pity Party, I think. But, I don't know what it is. I love that style of music, and especially when you take today's songs and update them. Or you wouldn't be updating them. You'd be retro-dating them, I guess.
Yes.
You're going back in time, not forward in time.
You know, it's funny because my son Michael is 16, and he has started an a cappella group, like a barbershop quartet with some other kids.
Yeah.
And I said, what are you going to do with this? And they get together and they practice. And you know what?
It sounds good.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
Because, I don't know, it just brings you back to a time where we were kids.
Right.
I mean, we weren't born when they first came out, but we heard our parents listening to that, and it just brings, it's just nice little memories.
Yeah, it is. But it's strange because if you think about just the nature of what a memory is, you know, we weren't around, as you said, during that era, but there's something so nostalgic.
Yeah.
And I really do. Whenever I hear, by all rights, you and I should not be fans of the Andrews Sisters or their music because we weren't there the first time. So all we know is secondhand information. But there's just something to the energy of the way that they used to sing back then. I love that stuff.
Well, it just, to me, seemed like entertainers back then really put their all into it.
Yeah.
And so many people were entertainers, singers. Like, you think of the old variety shows, they did a lot of stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Sing, dance.
A little bit of everything.
Comedy.
Yeah. Yeah. That's why, like, when somebody who would be, I guess Bruno Mars would be a good example of this. So he comes out, and he's really doing stuff from years and years and years ago. So some of the audience gets that and appreciates it. But to other audience members, that's like a whole new thing. Even though it's already happened, they're seeing it for the first time. So it's new.
But it's entertainment, bottom line. Whatever music you're into, you can't not like him. Plus, he is adorable.
There's that. Yeah, he is.
Oh, my God. I'd just like to put him in my pocket. He's so cute.
Now, if Bruno Mars is missing anytime soon, people who heard you say
will go,
I bet Wendy's pocket has Bruno Mars in it. I bet.
What's the name of these women?
Babylon 5.
I love that. Are there five of them?
No, there's only three. So right off the bat, the math is not great, but the sound is fantastic. And they dress up era, and they do a whole bunch of songs from that era. And they just played a couple of dates. Like I said, they were in town for a bunch of dates last month, the last one being last weekend. But I didn't see them. I wasn't aware of their work until over the weekend. But I sent off a note immediately going, you must be on the show. We have to have you. And got a note back an hour later going, oh, we're so sorry. We all left town. They're doing separate projects and stuff all over the country. So
do they do the Boogie Woogie Bugle Boy?
I didn't hear that one. I heard four other songs that they did. I didn't hear that one, but I would think that if you're mimicking songs of that era, that and Don't Sit Under the Apple Tree are probably among your standards.
Don't sit under the apple tree with anyone else but me.
Yeah.
Hi, Kim.
Hi, I was just singing along with you. Don't Sit Under the Apple Tree.
Yeah.
My God. You know catchy. What?
You can sing and I'll do the bung, bung, bung part. Go ahead.
Go.
You sing.
Bung, bung. You gotta dun 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 dun. You gotta start,
Mr. Sandman.
No, I'll do that part. You do the bung bung. Oh, Mr. Sandman.
See, it's not easy.
Bung bung bung. Bung 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 bung.
Make him the cutest that I've ever seen.
Bung 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 bung.
Give him two lips like roses and clover.
Bung 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 bung.
And tell him that his lonesome nights are over.
That's not bad, you guys.
We're taking it on the road, Kim.
America does have talent.
I'm telling you, you know, I am a 61-year-old woman, and I have been singing these songs my entire life.
They're beautiful, aren't they?
Yeah, they are the best. I was hiding in my parents' bedroom when, you know, in the 1960s, singing very quietly so no one could hear me. But I ended up being a singer, working on cruise ships, et cetera, nightclubs. I talked to you, Bill, before with your bad voice and your lemon. You were drinking lemon.
I do remember.
Oh, I was on vacation. I remember hearing your voice was terrible.
You saved me.
It was awful, but you're fixed, right?
I don't like to talk about that, but my voice is good too.
Okay, very good. But now, I mean, this music is making such a beautiful comeback. I have never stopped singing it, and now I sing about, you know, 500 shows a year, all in retirement communities, you know, nursing homes, the Alzheimer's, dementia people. This music snaps them right back to attention.
It would have to.
I bet it does.
It's a miracle.
Yep.
It is an absolute little miracle. And the response, that's where I'm going right now, to a place, a memory care place. And I go there every month and we sing, you know, Don't Sit Under the Apple Tree. We sing Que Sera, Sera, everything. And their eyes well up and they hold my hand and they sing with me and we all fall apart. It's the most magnificent thing. And I'm praying, hoping against hope, that the younger generation will get wind of this and, you know, come on along, because this music is so extraordinary that that's all I have to say.
Makes you feel good, doesn't it? I agree.
So what songs will you be performing later on today, Kim?
Today, I'll probably do Broadway, you know, a lot of Broadway songs. I'll do everything from the 40s. I'll sing, you know, Everybody Loves Me. I'll sing Que Sera Sera. I'll sing all the Andrews Sisters songs. I can get out about 15 or 20 songs in an hour. And when I go to places like this, I keep it as familiar as possible so that they do sing along with me. And they all shout out, oh, we sang that at my wedding.
Oh, well, nice.
You know, I've done these programs where, you know, some like dementia patients are staring off into space and holding hands with their loved ones, and their loved ones are enjoying the program. And then, but the patient is off in their own world. And then I'll sing a song that brings them right back. And then they look up at their partner for the first time and see them for the first time. And, you know, and it's just, and they touch spaces. I mean, it's just, I can't even describe what happened.
You're doing a great thing, and I'm going to have my 16-year-old continue with that barbershop quartet, and maybe he could go sing at places like that.
Absolutely.
They'd love it.
It's the most extraordinary, fulfilling work I've ever done, ever, and I'll keep doing it as long as I have a voice.
Excellent.
It's so good. So
que sera, sera.
What a great song. It's corny and fantastic. Everybody knows it.
Thank you, Kim.
Thanks, Kim.
Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. I know Doris Day had a hit with that in the 60s, but somebody must have had a hit with that prior to Doris Day, right?
I'm quite sure. We'll take a break, and then we have more girl talk to come. I can't. How do you spell Babylon? I can't figure it out.
You're not finding it?
It just keeps coming up with Babylon 5, and I'm not a Trekkie.
Oh, yeah, that's not it. All right, I'll find it. All right, a break, more show. If you want to jump in, 312-981-7200. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Flatfoot Fuji with the Floyd Floyd. Flatfoot Fuji with the Floyd Floyd.
He was a famous trumpet from the Chicago way. The Alley Boots Tom, no one else could play. He was a top man at his class.
Now this is a band called the Papini Sisters. Doing 40s music, obviously. They're a New York cabaret group, a trio, very, very talented.
You're an old man in a little man's body.
I don't know what it is about this stuff, but I could listen to this stuff and Frank Sinatra all day long. I just love it.
Hey, Harold.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. Somebody yelling at you?
Yeah, my banker.
Your banker? Yell? I'd find a new bank.
Yeah. No, I like it. I've been for like a year. And I
sure.
If you don't yell at me, I'm not going to come back. All right.
Excellent.
100 for 4 and then everything else is 20.
$1 million.
So, anyways, yeah, I ran into, well, they run into the fans, Punini Sisters, but I.
Punini Sisters?
Punini, that's who you just played.
Papini?
Papini,
yeah, that in New York, right?
Yeah, and Bath and Body Works with my girlfriend.
Boy, you have an interesting life. You go to the bank, you go to Bath and Body Works.
Yeah, well, you know, you got to get out more. Really do.
All right, so you were with your girlfriend and you ran into the Papini Sisters.
Well, they don't enter them, but I was there, and they came on at Christmas time and they had a Christmas album. And I said, this is cool, man. I said, I got Led Zeppelin and Black Sabbath and Deep Purple and everything else. But, I mean, sometimes I get a kick out of that stuff. I have the Andrew Sisters stuff, you know, the original stuff. And I said, it's kind of a cool little twist. So I looked at Shazammed it, and then I bought me a handful of those songs. So
what are you doing now, Harold? I'm sorry. I'm so distracted.
I'm at the gym right now, and I'm doing push-ups.
You went from the bank to the gym.
It's one of those combo bank and gyms that you see all the time now. Very popular.
Exactly what it is.
You lift giant bags of money. I don't know how they do it, but people get in good shape. Yeah. And were they nice to you? Did you have a pleasant experience with them?
Yes, they were excellent. Yes. You mean the gym or the bank?
The Papini Sisters.
He didn't
really run into them.
No, I didn't run into them.
His girlfriend turned him on to the Christmas album. Is that what we're getting out of this?
Are you listening?
Not really.
I says I was with me neither. I thought it was GCI.
Let's not. No.
No, I was at Bed Bath & Beyond with my girlfriend, and they were playing it on the Muzak.
And you liked it.
Yes, but hey, you know, this is cool. I've got some Andrew Sisters stuff. you know, and I said, let me pick some of this stuff up. So they've got a Christmas album. They do things like modern Christmas stuff, like Elton John and George Michael's, and they do versions of those songs, kind of in the old 40 style as well.
Well, cool. And also check out Babylon 5, and it's spelled, because we didn't know, it's Babe-Alon. So Babe/Alon 5. So check them out, Harold. We'll talk
to you
later.
Boy, you couldn't GPS that call if you tried. It was all over the place. Postmodern Jukebox is the band I was trying to think of earlier. They're the ones. It's a modern band, and they take
Because you know this I'm is all them. About Debbie's.
Listen to this.
About Debbie's and no trouble. I'm all about Debbie's. About Debbie's and no trouble. I'm all about Debbie's. About Debbie's and no trouble. I'm all about Debbie's.
This is more like a swing kind of.
Well, yeah, it's more swing.
It's pretty clear.
And what they do is, they keep bringing in other guest performers to be their lead singer. Like, they have a lead singer. That guy you heard is he's lead singer on a lot of their stuff. But they keep bringing in guest artists to sing with them. And it's always good. They're really good. Puddle's Pity Party is the other band. That's the one with the sad-looking clown who takes songs and sings them in a very sad manner. I know that sounds, do I really want to hear a sad clown singing sad songs? When you see it or hear it, it all comes together beautifully.
All right, Kathy wants to jump in on this convo. Hi, Kathy.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
I've been listening for a long time.
Thank you, Kathy. We appreciate it.
And do you like it, or you just have been listening for a long time?
No, I like it.
Good.
Awesome.
Good. You like this kind of music, too, huh?
I do. You know, my parents grew up in that era, so they got us turned on to, our whole family, actually. So we all have Andrew Sisters tapes and that kind of stuff. But one night, my mom said, why don't we go with some friends over to one of the churches? They have some music. You might like it. It's Andrew Sisters music. It was excellent. And they're called the Legacy Girls.
And they're local? They're from here?
Yeah, they're from Chicago. They have a website, legacygirls.com. But they also go out. I've heard of them going out to the honor flights when they come
in nice.
Chicago.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
How perfect.
And they go out and play at the airport when they come in.
Oh,
so
that's a great idea. We'll look
they
that up.
They also do other music, but that's where I've heard them. And I've heard them, I think, once or twice. And they, if you close your eyes, you really think you're listening to the Andrew
Sisters. Sure, of course.
They're so good.
Well,
yeah.
We'll check them out, the Legacy Girls. Kathy, thank you so much.
Right. Sure.
Appreciate it.
And was it the Squirrel Nut Zippers that were popular 15 or 20 years ago who did also retro-y type?
Yeah, they did like a swing thing.
Yeah.
This is Puddle's Pity Party singing Royals.
I've never seen a diamond in the flesh. I cut my teeth.
He's dressed as a clown, looks very sad.
Yeah, he looks like a sad clown. He's dressed. You know who he looks like? He is. Remember Coco the Clown from Out of the Inkwell? Remember
no.
that cartoon in the. No? He's dressed. If, I know this is a stretch, and only four people will know what I'm talking about, but there was a cartoon in the 40s or 50s, Out of the Inkwell with Coco the Clown, and he's dressed to look just like Coco.
With a crown on his head, three big tassels on his clown
suit.
Yeah,
very sad looking.
And kind of like the Robert Palmer girls sort of behind him. Not
very
really.
Yeah, but the same flavor.
Yeah.
A lot slower.
This is very weird, but I will be watching this all night. Puddle's Pity Party.
He's got about a dozen videos that all look the same. It's him in a white room. It's almost nightmarish, but it like once you see two or three of them, you fall into the trap and you go, I like this.
He does a Pinball Wizard, too, yeah. By The Who. This is a live action one. And he's getting up on stage. Puddles the Clown, never heard of him.
Yeah. It's a cult following.
I guess. Count me in.
Yeah. We're always accepting new members. All right, a break, a lot more show, including Bill James, the author of The Baseball Abstract. He'll join us to talk about the start of the baseball season at 2:05. It's Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder on WGN.
It's baseball time of year.
It really is the day that everyone in every city is optimistic that this is their team's year. We do that every year here in Chicago. That's an annual thing. This is the year. This is it.
Well, Cubs fans have been saying that forever, and you are both, and I know I make fun of you, but you truly are a lover of baseball, and you know, like, every time I think you're a Cubs fan, you know some Sox information, and
yeah.
You really are the only person I know who truly does not have a favorite.
If I can thank you. If I can stick up for myself for a second, it's harder to be a fan of both because your dreams are dashed twice every year instead of just once.
You lose twice as many times.
I do. I do. It's harder to be a fan of both teams. If you choose one team and that team doesn't win at all, you feel bad the one time. But I feel bad twice.
I'm just a Southsider. I really
White Sox only?
I don't even buy anything royal blue.
Because of the Cubs,
yeah.
Really? I've always been baffled by the not just dislike, but the absolute hatred for the other team. If you're a Cubs fan, you hate the White Sox and their fan base. If you're a White Sox fan, you hate the Cubs and their fan base. I don't get it. I want to see both teams do well.
Well, I had an epiphany last year when the Cubs were getting close to doing well.
Yeah.
And I really wanted them to win.
Did you
remember on the air? Because you were even surprised that my attitude changed. And I still love the Sox, and
right.
I'm not a fan of the Cubs. But at that point, I wanted them to do well, and I think a little of you rubbed off on me.
Yeah.
Because it would be good for the city. You know, we already had a World Series, albeit a while ago.
Well, it's all right. It's been a couple of years. But didn't you notice that the attitude of people just walking around town when the Cubs were on that run into the playoffs, I think they won their last 8 regular season games last year, and then they did well early in the playoffs. They won the wild card game, and then they won the first round. It just seemed like everybody around town was in a much better mood. There was hope.
That was because of your Jake Arrieta song. Do we still have that Jake Arrieta song?
No.
Come on. Kevin, find it. I think we just have to reintroduce it. There's no way Jake Arrieta is going to have a season like he did last year. It's
impossible. He played.
Which is good because the pressure's off of him. Then.
Right. I think he'll have a good season, but it's unrealistic to think he could do what he did in the second half of last season. It's rarely done.
Your Jake Arrieta song pulled everyone together.
It's the reason there's a break in our show now. The song is so long that management said we got to put a 1-hour gap if you guys ever play the song again. That's why Steve's business lunch is so popular. Just if we ever play the song in the first half, there's an hour break.
So if we play it again, will that counteract it? So
I don't know.
Not have an hour break in our
I
show.
No.
Oh, Arrieta, Jacob Arrieta, Arrieta. He's my favorite Cub. Almost pitched a perfect game. Destined for the Hall of Fame. Freeze the frame. Shout his name. Perfect game. Hall of Fame. Oh, Arrieta, Jacob Arrieta, Arrieta. He's my favorite Cub. Doesn't give up many hits. Enjoys a hot dog and some Schlitz. Many hits. Have a Schlitz. Perfect game. Hall of Fame. Oh, Arrieta, Jacob Arrieta, Arrieta. He's my favorite Cub. Give him his Cy Young Award. Martin Milner, Kent McCord. Young Award, Kent McCord. Many hits. Have a Schlitz. Perfect game. Hall of Fame. Oh, Arrieta, Jacob Arrieta.
We don't have to play the whole song.
Yes, we do.
He's my favorite Cub. Loves to pitch at Wrigley Field. Once hurt his arm, but now it's healed. Wrigley Field, now it's healed. Young Award, Kent McCord. Many hits. Have a Schlitz. Perfect game. Hall of Fame. Oh, Arrieta, Jacob Arrieta, Arrieta. He's my favorite Cub. Brawny arms and a manly beard. I'd tell you more, but it's getting weird. Manly beard, getting weird. Wrigley Field, now it's healed. Young Award, Kent McCord. Many hits, have a Schlitz. Perfect game, Hall of Fame. Oh, Arrieta, Jacob Arrieta, Arrieta. He's my favorite Cub. Tonight's the night we've waited for. Lock it down and win some more. Waited for, win some more. Manly beard, getting weird. Wrigley Field, now it's healed. Young Award, Kent McCord. Many hits, have a Schlitz. Perfect game, Hall of Fame. Oh, Arrieta, Jacob Arrieta, Arrieta. He's my favorite Cub. Anthony Rizzo has my full respect. Chris Bryant makes me genuflect. Full respect, genuflect. Waiting for, win some more. Manly beard, getting weird. Wrigley Field, now it's healed. Young Award, Kent McCord. Many hits, have a Schlitz. Perfect game, Hall of Fame. Oh, Arrieta, no one does it better. Arrieta, looks good in a sweater. Arrieta, Greek people give him feta. Arrieta, he's my favorite Cub. All right.
Well, very split on the texts we're getting here. Someone said, thanks for that song. I just started singing it out of the blue this weekend. Somebody said, my radio has been turned off.
Oh, that's not good. I predicted at the time, Wendy, that I would win an American Music Award for the song. That has not happened yet, but I'm still hopeful.
You're still young. Well,
I'm not that young anymore.
847 makes me smile every time. And
sure.
It makes me smile. Kevin's in there bopping his head. Bertrand left.
Kevin was having a seizure. There's a big difference between bopping your head and having a seizure.
Should consider a duet, maybe like Taylor Swift.
Well, you and Puddle's Pity Party should get together. you're talking about this a cappella stuff.
Yeah.
You'd fit right in.
All right.
Babylon 5 and you.
I might work with them. That would be possible.
We're going to take a quick break, and then can we share some of the weirdest ballpark food? One is actually going to be served on the Sox side,
yeah.
And I want to try it.
All right.
We'll tell you about it, 312-981-7200. It's the a cappella genius of Bill Leff, Wendy Snyder, 720 WGN. All right, again, mixed comments on your Jake Arrieta tune.
That's what I was going for, by the way. I wanted some people to enjoy it very much and other people to be repulsed by it. That's what my goal was.
Well, I think the best slam coming from the texters from 331, as a Greek from Chicago, all my feta is going to U.S. Cellular. So that is my favorite slam.
That's very funny.
And then I love that song, So Clever. And another texter said, where is it? My husband and I were fortunate enough to go to spring training. We saw Arrieta strike out 4 and 2 innings. My husband sang your song constantly the trip. Thank you.
Isn't that nice?
I don't know what thank you means. Is it thank you or thank you?
I'm sure it was meant in the nicest regard. I'm positive.
All right, are you going to try some ballpark food that's weird?
Sure. What do you got?
Do you eat when you go to the ballpark?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Do you typically just get a hot dog and a beer?
It varies. If I see something that
lemon
looks interesting
chill
to me, I would have a lemon chill like that. Yeah.
I typically do a beer.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe another beer.
Mm-hmm. And then to top that off?
A beer.
A beer. Why not?
And I love a funnel cake, and I love a Polish.
All good. Everything is good, sure.
Would you try a burgeritza?
If I knew what it was.
The Braves are selling a 2-ounce hamburger patty draped with 5 slices of cheddar cheese and bacon, sandwiched between 2 8-inch pepperoni pizzas.
Oh, wow.
$26.
That's a bargain at $26.
All right.
And what's it called, a burgeritza?
Yeah, but it's stupid because it's a bacon cheeseburger wrapped in pepperoni pizza. There's too many meats mixing there.
Is that for one person or do you share that with the people in your row?
Defibrillator sold separately. This is from Red Eye. Atlanta. Blue Jays are selling a chicken and waffle on a stick.
Wait, how would that translate on a stick?
It's a deep fried skewered taste treat with a side of broccoli and cabbage slaw.
You could leave that off of mine, thanks.
Why would you put that with it?
That would ruin it.
It's probably like a long chicken tender.
Yeah, with a waffle around
on
it.
On a stick.
That I would have that without the vegetables on the side. That's unnecessary and not good. Equally unnecessary and not good.
Ever going to go see a Toronto play?
I would go see the Blue Jays play, sure.
Buffalo cauliflower poutine. How do I say this? Poutine?
That's correct.
That's not nice.
I wasn't calling you a name.
I think that's rude.
It's a concoction of breaded cauliflower and buffalo sauce with unsqueaky cheese curds, scallions, and then some gravy. Why not?
It's good.
I haven't had this
poutine in general. Yeah, I mean, it's really heavy, but it's like a Canadian dish. And it's
big in Montreal, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cheese curds and like cheese on top and then gravy. And oh my God, it's
the cauliflower is not. What's with the need to throw vegetables into fun baseball park food?
I think it was on sale.
That's what it was.
I love fried cauliflower. I love fried anything. You could fry a rat and I'd eat
but
it.
If, really?
Probably.
Kevin, there's a test for tomorrow's show. Bring in a rat.
All right, I'll bring
some,
a rat.
Some oil.
You dirty rat.
What's the point, though, if you're at a ballpark? You would get cauliflower at a ballpark? That doesn't seem...
Well, it's deep fried in buffalo sauce. I don't know. None of these sound like good.
That does not work for me.
Chicken and donut skewer. The Rangers are offering a 12-inch skewer of donut holes and fried chicken drizzled with buffalo honey sauce.
That's interesting, but I'm not positive they blend well. Separately, yes. Not together.
It's funny you say interesting, because every time we're out to dinner and we try something new, Jim will say to me, what do you think? And if I say something's interestingly good, mm-hmm. it means I'll never order it again.
Because it has piqued your interest for the moment,
it's
but it's not good
but
enough.
It's not good.
Right. I get that.
Cheeseburger dog in Arizona. They make their hot dogs out of grilled hamburgers, seasoned with bacon, green onion, and cheddar cheese, breaded, deep fried, and presented for your dining pleasure on a hot dog bun.
I would have that. You wouldn't do that? It would be a jolt at first because it looks like a hot dog but tastes like a hamburger, but I could see where that would work.
That's weird.
At what stadium has that?
That's in Arizona.
The Diamondbacks?
Yeah, and quit calling them the D-backs. I hate that.
That also sounds rude.
Tater tot chop. If you are hoping for a pork chop covered with tots, you'll be bummed. This one is tots mixed with waffle batter, bacon, cheddar cheese, and jalapenos pressed in a waffle iron, somehow made into a sandwich with a side of Coca-Cola ketchup. It's an Atlanta
thing.
What's
Coca-Cola ketchup?
I love the sound of all of that.
Except for the jalapenos, because that would taint it too much. It'd be too hot and spicy.
Mm-mm.
You would go with for that, Kevin?
Oh, yeah.
You don't want a waffle and a jalapeno together.
That's what I mean.
Says a person that hasn't tried it yet.
Have you?
Had that?
No, but but I'm saying the opposite.
But all right. I think the jalapeno would be too dominating of a flavor.
And Coca-Cola ketchup is just ketchup sweetened with Coca-Cola would be my guess.
That's it? Oh, I've seen that with Dr. Pepper. Dr. Pepper does barbecue sauce and I think ketchup also. Like a year or two ago, that was
they make their own
display.
Or there's a recipe?
They make their own. You could buy it pre-made with the Dr. Pepper logo on it. Yeah, they had it at Jewel.
Oh, I'm going to win $1 million, by the way, in the Jewel Monopoly.
Are you really? That's a lot of money.
Eight.
Are you just missing one?
Yeah, maybe
probably,
two in the million.
You'll probably get the million.
I'm going to win a $500 luxury spa day.
That'd be excellent.
Wicked Pig. I like the name of this. The name for this Rangers concoction. Who are the Rangers?
Texas.
See, I would have gone Boston for the Wicked Pig.
Yeah, just the word wicked as a precursor. Yeah.
It's a Rangers concoction. Is almost as good as the sandwich itself. Pulled pork, bacon, sausage. This is my worst nightmare. This is mixing too many meats. Listen to this. Pulled pork, bacon, sausage, prosciutto, ham, pork rinds, coleslaw, and barbecue sauce.
All together at once?
Yeah, you cannot.
How do you, what is that? Like, what's the?
It's a sandwich.
Oh, okay.
You cannot mix that many meats.
You have to buy two seats at the ballpark. You wouldn't fit in one seat if you ate that.
But first of all, the bacon would overpower everything.
Probably.
I feel like the prosciutto would. That's such like a powerful.
That has hardly any taste.
No way. Are you kidding me? It's overpowering.
Prosciutto
not. Absolutely.
Why must you guys always fight over prosciutto?
The Flying Pig, another porky pleasure, this time at Minute Maid Field.
Yeah.
Deep fried pork shank.
You're welcome.
Shanks for the memories. Deep fried pork shank covered in peanut curry ranch.
Wow.
Without orange juice infused ketchup. I don't know what that means. I think
they mean whiff. Were you assuming there'd be orange juice infused ketchup?
What's a pork shank?
I'm not sure.
It's a knife you make in jail from a hot dog.
At a pork-related jail. I would think it's like the...
A pork shop the, kind of thing?
Yeah, with the bone still in.
It would have to be, right?
Side of the meat, right, so you cook it slowly and...
It comes from the front leg of the pig. It can be chewy when cooked incorrectly.
Does it say if the bone's still involved?
Yes, there is a bone. When prepared properly, however, they become succulent and flavorful.
Oh, all right, then I'm in.
Which one are you?
Succulent.
I drafted first.
I drafted first.
So you need to braise them and cook them slowly. So yeah, pork shank is like a chicken leg but made out of pork.
I bet that's easy to eat in your seat at the ballpark.
If it's got a bone, it's got a handle.
I know, but wouldn't the sauce that's on it just get everywhere?
The peanut curry sauce?
You'd spill on the guy next to you.
Sit with someone you know about very well.
You'd have to.
The Everything Dog, again from Atlanta. This one honors former Braves owner Ted Turner, mm-hmm. who is known for his lavish lifestyle, although perhaps nothing like this. It's a foot-long dog,
yeah,
choked with fries, chili, nacho chips, beer cheese, jalapenos, and popcorn. Seriously?
Popcorn on a hot dog?
And drizzled with more of that Coca-Cola-infused barbecue sauce.
Wow.
That sounds like crap.
That's a bunch. Well, the Coca-Cola makes sense because Ted Turner is involved with Coca-Cola.
Okay, but still, you're going to put popcorn, chili, nacho chips. You're going to cut your gum.
They just take anything and throw it on there.
Reynolds
wrap,
candy.
Yeah, throw some Reynolds wrap on there. Milk Duds, sure, put some Milk Duds on there.
All right, this sounds pretty interesting. The Cracker Jack and Mac Dog. It's just fun to say.
Oh, what's in there? I want that.
Three great ballpark foods, Cracker Jack, hot dogs, and macaroni and cheese into one messy concoction. And then there's caramel sauce. It's in Pittsburgh.
They're just picking food that would never go together and throwing it together. But that one, I have to admit, I would try that one.
I don't know if I would, but I would definitely try something that they're offering when you go to a Sox game, our White Sox. They describe this, it's a Chicago dog Bloody Mary. So, you know how people, I love Bloody Marys, and if you go to a good Bloody Mary bar, you can put all kinds of stuff in it, like salami and shrimp, and
right.
It used to just be celery.
Not anymore.
No. Well, this is a classic Bloody Mary with celery salt and poppy-seeded rim.
Yeah.
And then a skewer with a mini Vienna beef Chicago dog served in a souvenir mason jar. I am so
yeah,
all
let's
over
do that.
That works? Yeah.
So we'll go to a Sox game, Kevin. Hand
Done.
That. And you get the souvenir mason jar.
Great.
I'll go to the recycle. Game with you guys, but you can't fight over prosciutto like you always do, the two of you.
We won't. But here's my question.
Cut it out.
It has to be a plastic mason jar because how are they? They're not going to give you a glass.
Glass one? Right. You'll throw it at the visiting team. It's got to be plastic.
Well, really?
I know.
I would try that, though. A Chicago dog Bloody Mary.
Mmm.
I like it.
That works for
it's
you?
It's a little All right. cocktail wiener.
All right, how about this?
A Donald Trump footlong.
A quick break. Steve with the news, and then Bill James, the author of the Baseball Abstract, will talk us about the upcoming baseball season. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Steve, thanks very much. We're going to be talking to Bill James in just a little bit. He's the author of Baseball Abstract. He's been doing that since the 1970s. He looks at baseball from a very, very different way. Our talk of food, ballpark food, reminded me of something peculiar. I only eat hot dogs when I'm at a baseball game. There's something about being at a ballpark that the hot dog makes sense. But if I'm at home, I don't think I've had a hot dog in 15 years. It's been that long.
Really? We'll, like, go to Portillo's and grab a hot dog
yeah.
and bring them home.
Yeah.
But it's almost like you have to get a hot dog when you're at the ballpark.
Yeah. It makes the game better. It makes the hot dog taste better if they're in unison. I don't know why. It just fits the atmosphere.
You know, it's going to all the Sox games. We've brought the kids because it is such a family-friendly place over at U.S. Cellular.
Mm-hmm.
You can do all the little events. You can run against Scotty Pods. You can hit the ball, batting cages. There's fundamentals, it's called.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the greatest things I was able to teach my kids, you know, Jim would bring the boys. We'd all go together. He'd teach them how to keep score.
Mm-hmm.
Or is that what you do? You keep score?
Yeah. And there's really no reason for it, but it's a tradition when you go to keep score. But
and it's fun for a father and son to do that together,
yeah.
isn't it?
But it's one of those things that even as you're doing it, you go, I'm not sure why I'm doing this, but I still do it.
The whole game, or do you start out?
No, I do the whole game, and then when I'm done, I throw it away. I don't know why. It's not like I've never had a time where the commissioner of baseball has called me up and has said, boy, we lost all the records of the game. Is there any chance you were keeping score? And I go, as a matter of fact, commissioner, I was.
Well, Jim taught the boys how to do that. I didn't know that K was a strikeout. I still don't understand it.
Because
there's a K in strike. Out.
Why wouldn't it just be S-O?
That's a great question. But what I taught the boys, which I thought was very important, you know, when you're wearing the White Sox jerseys and you get a hot dog, usually a little kid gets ketchup on it still, not mustard.
Sure.
But Jimmy Mack would get mustard. I would teach the kids and Jim to lean forward when you're eating because
right.
if you sit back and the goopy ketchup or mustard comes out.
It gets on you.
You've totally ruined your White Sox jersey.
That's true. That's very helpful.
So I taught him to lean forward while eating a hot dog.
What is it about baseball that of all the items of apparel. You have not one but two teams named after footwear, after socks. What is it about socks that two different teams have said, we really need to pay tribute to socks?
Because they wore this white stockings, right?
They were, but...
Because they had white socks on.
I know, but it's not... I mean, I have to say, there's more inventive names than a guy just looking down going, well, I'm wearing socks. I should probably mention that in the team name.
Well, you have
he
some stupid names,
too. He was wearing
shirts
and a jersey and stuff. Why did he go with socks? Two teams, not just one. Boston and Chicago.
Well, ask them.
I will ask them. I will ask them.
I mean, the Cubs... which we all have heard is a spinoff of the Bears, but now I guess that's not true.
It depends on who you ask.
I'm going to Snopes.
They won't tell you.
Why?
They're closed.
They're never closed.
They take baseball opening day off. Right. Some people believe that the Cubs were named because they're smaller versions of the Chicago Bears. Other people say that that's not possible. See what they say on there.
I wonder if they will have anything on it.
And I don't mean to rip on both Boston and Chicago. I like both teams a lot, but it just seems like you could have been just slightly more inventive than looking down and going, I'm wearing socks. That's something. Let's mention that.
You know,
our team name.
There are some other stupid ones. The D-backs.
Well, those are snakes. That's a snake is more menacing than a pair of socks. If you had to go.
It depends how bad they smell.
If you were in the desert and there were two roads and one of them had a snake with giant fangs and the other one was just a pair of socks, which one would you choose? Which is more menacing? The snake?
Well, yeah, but you could kill the snake.
Oh, no. Socks are coming at me. Ah, that's not that scary.
It's not supposed to be scary. They're just supposed to be a good team. I gotta figure this out because I've heard both things and I don't trust Wikipedia. I really don't. Wikipedia is always wrong. Hey, Terry.
Hey, good afternoon.
How
What's
are you?
What's up, Terry?
Another little piece of baseball trivia.
Sure.
It's about the only sport I can think of where the manager wears a uniform.
Yeah, we talked about that a week or so ago, that in basketball and in football and in hockey, your coach dresses like a businessman.
Yeah, they always got suits on and that kind of stuff.
Not football coaches. They have, like, sweats or windbreakers or something.
Well, there's extreme... Like, I always mention Tom Landry, who was dressed impeccably. He always wore a suit.
Oh, my gosh. Mr. Connoisseur. Yeah.
Terry, we learned that it's because the managers go out on the field and they have to be suited up. That's what somebody told us. And pretty much we'll believe anything.
Okay, well, you and me both.
You wouldn't want to get dirt on your Brooks Brothers suit. You got to wear a baseball uniform, so it fits a little more.
Yeah, well, if they were wearing a Brooks Brothers shirt, the suits, they probably wouldn't kick dirt on the umpire.
Right, that's true. They'd be better behaved, no doubt about it. Well, thank you, Terry. Have a great opening day.
All right, and Steve is on the line too. All right, who was first? Not the chicken or the egg, the Bears or the Cubs?
The Cubs were established 40 years before the NFL existed.
Oh, so there's no way that they would have been a smaller version of the Bears.
No.
Right. Impossible. All right. That makes sense. Well, thank you for knowing that, Steve.
Okay. Thanks.
Steve is more valuable than the internet.
I know, because I can't find it. It's only Wikipedia, and as I said, I don't trust it because anyone can put stuff on there.
Right.
So the Cubs were... They
preceded them. Well, the Cubs have now not won a World Series in 108 or 109 years.
Who's counting?
And they were playing... I know. And they played for many years prior to that. So they've been around for, a century and a half, maybe. And the Bears haven't.
That's true. All right, because everybody says there's a connection there, and there isn't. I'm just trying to defend the White Sox.
Right.
Because, doesn't have to be a scary thing.
No, but...
The Orioles aren't really scary.
No, there's a lot of teams that aren't scary. It's just weird to me... There's no team named after pants or shirts or vests, but you have two teams named after socks.
What about the Jersey Jockstraps?
I don't think that's a team.
It should be.
There is no team called that.
All right, we have more Cubs-Bears talk. Hey, Matt, what's going on? This is Sports Talk 720.
Yeah, the Cubs were named because their team was so young when Cap Anson managed them.
Yeah.
That the rest of the league referred to them as Cubs, and it stuck.
Oh, all right.
So it has nothing to do with the Bears?
Absolutely not.
It's just a coincidence that we have two team, two Orsine-based teams.
Correct.
To what?
Or sign.
ALS.
Oh, Urs.
There's also another baseball team that has Sox. That's the Reds.
Right, the Red Sox and the White Sox.
No, the Red Legs, right?
The Cincinnati Reds.
Oh,
the Red Legs.
Oh, they were, right? They were also. I forgot about that.
Neener, neener, neener.
No, that's even weirder that there's three teams named after that.
It's very popular.
It's even stranger. Yeah.
Have you heard of the Jersey Jockstraps, Matt?
There's no team like that.
No, I've heard of the Supras, though.
Well, who are they?
That was the Dodgers before they were the Trolley Dodgers.
And what were they called? The Supras?
Yeah.
All right, that's the dumbest ever.
Yeah.
That is strange.
I don't know why. Well, they used to name a lot of teams after the manager, too.
Oh, they did?
Way back in the 1800s, yes.
Yeah. What a nice tribute.
That would be cool.
That would be nice.
The Lefts. Welcome to the field playing for the
Isn't that menacing?
Chicago Lefts.
That would be very menacing.
Whoop, 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 whoop.
The Venturas.
The Venturas. That sounds like a band.
Yeah, the surf rock. Thank you so much, Matt. We appreciate it. Mike has more Bears-Cubs talk. Go ahead, Mike. Sports 720.
Yeah. Yep. The reason the Bears are called the Bears and the Cubs are the Cubs is the Decatur Staleys moved to Chicago and played on Wrigley Field. And Papa Bear Hallis thought that football is a much more manly sport.
Yeah.
So he said, we're not going to be Cubs. We're going to be Bears.
Oh. So then the Bears were named after the Cubs, not the other way around.
Correct.
Okay. Wow. I didn't know that part. All right. Interesting. Thank you.
No problem.
What's a Staley?
It's a car.
What was it? A car? Is that why they named the Decatur Staleys after a car?
Yeah, I believe they were made in Decatur, the Staley car.
Oh, all right. If it was made there, then
it makes sense.
Yeah.
Where else would it be made?
Right.
Massachusetts? Why would it be the Decatur Staleys then?
I didn't know. This is news to me.
All right, now we have more. More controversy rages. Sports Talk 720. Hey, Milan, what's going on?
It's actually Milan.
Hi, Milan.
In the turn of the century, the Cubs were not going by the name of Cubs. They were basically they were the White Stockings. But being that they weren't using that name anymore, they were calling them the Colts and the Young this and that and everything else. So what they did was when the American League was starting up in Chicago, they asked if they could use the White Stockings name. Hence, the White Stockings started in the American League with the Cubs' old name.
So we stole it from the Cubs?
Well, you didn't steal it. They just weren't using it.
He had a name out there that paid tribute to Sox. Why wouldn't somebody grab it? It's so weird to me.
George Halas thought that there's the football players were bigger than baseball players.
Right.
So it only made sense that you got the Cubs, they're small, you got the football players, they're Bears. And then the colors, the orange and the navy were the University of Illinois colors. So that's what you got there.
Oh, yeah.
I wondered why they were the same. Thank you, Mr. History. We appreciate
Thanks, Milan.
Bear, you're my idol.
Oh, thank you. You might need to reevaluate, but thank you very much.
You set the bar very low, right. Milan. You right. really do.
Right. It's like limbo dancing, if I'm your idol. That's how low the bar is. Thank you, Milan. Take care.
No problem.
New York Knickerbockers. Knickerbockers were pants. The Knicks.
But pants I could almost see more than socks.
How? What's the difference?
Pants are more exciting than socks.
Well, you can't wear pants on your feet, for one thing, Wendy.
No, you can't.
All right, good to know. Quick break, and then more history of the Chicago sports teams as Sports 720 continues, because I don't know if we're going to talk to Bill James. We were supposed to talk
to
him,
trying to get him. Yeah,
maybe
we'll
he got confused on the time.
Right.
So maybe at 3, Roe can have him.
All right. We'll settle something. All right, it's Bill Money WGN.
We're doing a little baseball history since it's opening week. Is it opening day?
It's opening day for the Cubs and the White Sox. There were three games yesterday, day game and some night games. But today's the first day that the Cubs and the White Sox are playing. They're both in California. They're playing late tonight.
Okay, and we were trying to figure out the information. Did the Cubs follow the Bears? Did the Bears come first? Who came first, the chicken or the egg? And what are the Staleys? Andy, you have information?
Yeah, the Staleys down in Decatur were originally named after an agricultural company who processed grains. The owner was A.E. Staley. Therefore, he owned the team, so he called it the Staley Bears.
See, that's exactly what I said.
That is not exactly. You said a car.
car grain, almost the same amount of letters.
It was running on corn as fuel.
Ethanol. It was an ethanol precursor.
Sure.
Orion would be very disappointed in us. You know that, Andy. Thank you for the information.
Wait, I have to ask Andy very quickly. So at that point, Andy, Decatur had a sort of a pro team, but Chicago did not? Isn't that strange?
Yeah, exactly. That's the way it was. The Staley Bears originated, like I say, or Staley, Decatur Staley's originated in Decatur. And then, of course, Hallis bought them and moved them up to Chicago.
Yep.
Smart move.
Yep. And we've been winning championships ever since.
Oh, God, there comes the bitterness.
Amen.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Andy.
Yep. Thanks for taking my call.
Absolutely. You know whose situation is stranger in New York, where they have three teams whose names all rhyme? They had the New York Nets. Now it's the Brooklyn Nets, but it was the New York Nets for a while. And then it's the New York Mets, and it's also the New York Jets.
Well, that makes it easy, doesn't it?
Yes, if you're a poet. If you're a poet slash sports fan.
Jets, Mets, and Nets. Right. That makes total sense.
It's easy. You could even buy a jersey, I think, where the one letter is interchangeable. Like it just says ETS, and then you could put on, with Velcro, you could put on whatever letter makes you a fan of the Mets, Jets, or Nets.
So it was like a Sesame Street type thing?
Yeah. Yeah. You would save a lot of money that way.
Pan.
Right.
Ets.
Yeah.
Mets.
Yeah.
All right, and somebody wants to know, there's a logo that is the same. Where is this? Oh, I lost it. The texts are coming in fast and furious.
Sure.
Why is the Bears logo the same as the Cincinnati Reds? Very similar.
It's extremely similar. It's not exactly the same, but it is similar. Just, they stole it from us, I guess.
See, we could be Wikipedia. We could be the human Wikipedia.
I know. That would be a much better thing for the world, I think.
They are the exact same logo, just a different color. Please have this question addressed. Oh, we addressed it.
It is. It's similar. It's really, really close.
Well, we don't have an answer.
No.
We addressed it. Well,
it's been addressed.
You didn't include a Sazy, though, so we can right. send it back to you.
Sadly. All right. A break. Some news. More show coming your way after that. It's Bill Leffin. It's Wendy Snyder on WGN. I found this footage over
Weird
the weekend.
Al?
No, we you can find Weird Al footage almost anywhere. He's very popular. I call it internet fishing, where you're looking for something on the internet and it leads you to find something else and then something else. Well, I found this article on Huffington Post, and I didn't know such a thing existed, but apparently from the mid 1800s and then for many years after, they used to have these clubs called Fat Men's Clubs, where the fatter you were, the better. It was considered a status symbol to be as rich as you could possibly be, and at the same exact time, to be as fat as you could possibly be.
Well, you had money to eat in excess.
Right, and they did. They did. So what they would show is all these guys who all looked like Grover Cleveland. Every guy looked like Grover Cleveland.
With a little W.C. Fields mixed in.
A little bit of, yeah. There's a little bit of W.C. Fields sprinkled in.
The love child of.
But they all have similar top hats and coats and jowls, and then they did things together. Like they would go on fat guy field trips. They would go places together, and that was a fat men's club. And I didn't know they had fat men's clubs, because now the phrase is you can never be too rich or too thin, but back then it was just the opposite. The rich part remains the same. That's never going to change. It's really great, apparently. I don't know, but from what I read, it's great to be rich, but back then it was also great to be very, very fat, too.
Well, that was...
Oh, Norman! Don't call me Norman. Call me Chubsy Ubsy.
Yep. If your name was Norman back then, you asked if you'd be called Chubsy Ubsy instead.
That is so sad. He just did that because the other people wouldn't call him fat. He just
Norman?
Took himself down.
That was from
yeah.
Little for people who don't know, that's from Little Rascals. That was a character, Norman.
Spanky wasn't that then.
No, or Porky was a little bit porky.
Hence the name.
Yeah.
See, that's so sad.
Well, it says here in the mid-1800s, a fat movement gained momentum when affluent people gained momentum when affluent people who didn't have to work and could afford to eat started gaining weight. It wasn't long before overweight men fraternized around with their heaviness. That was a big deal. I'm fat, you're fat, let's pal around.
Their mantra was, we're fat and we're making the most of it.
Was that what they would say?
According to this article.
The Fat Men's Association of New York City, the FMA, which first met in 1869, is the first club to organize, according to Carrie Seagrave, author of Obesity in America, A History of Social Attitudes and Treatment. It set off a trend that would spread across the country and into France and Germany, where members could network, eat a lot of food together, and perhaps most importantly, defiantly wear their weight as a badge of pride and honor. We're fat, and we are making the most of it.
They had to be at least 200 pounds.
See, now, by today's standards...
That's not fat. These guys look way bigger than
that.
That's
not fat.
But the guys in your video that we're going to post, you can go to our blog at... Oh, Facebook page. What, you don't do the live blog anymore? Well,
did Kevin give up on the live? Are you done with that? No, we're still... No, you are done with it? It's too much work for him.
Don't get in trouble like that.
All right.
Sorry, we'll talk about that off the air. Yeah, their mantra was, we're fat and we're making the most of it. Here's another quote. I've got to be good-natured. I can't fight and I can't run.
Oh, all right.
Members had to be at least 200 pounds, pay a dollar fee to enter, and learn a secret handshake and password that I believe involved a giant turkey leg.
The handshake would win them. They would start the handshake, and then both members would go, you know what, that's fine. I gotta lay down.
Well, this is a particular one in a tavern in Wells River, Vermont. One of America's most successful fat men's clubs was launched in 1903. Twice a year, members gathered with meetings announced in advance to allow the men to stuff up in order to meet the minimum weight requirement.
What's the requirements for a successful fat men's club?
Well, they said originally it was 200 pounds was the minimum, but the footage I showed you, those guys are all tipping the scales at 3 or 350, right?
Yes. Here's a quote. This village is full of bulbous and overhanging abdomens and double chins tonight, for the New England Fat Men's Club is in session at Hale's Tavern.
Hear, hear, yelled one of the fat men.
The natives are mostly bony and angular, have stared with envy at the portly forms and rubicund faces which have arrived on every train. Rubicund? I've never heard that word before. The fat man's clubs of the late 19th and early 20th centuries were spectacular celebrations of the wealth and chubbiness of a bygone era.
Sure. Would that fly today if somebody started a fat man's club in Chicago? Would people subscribe to that?
I don't know.
Because now, it's even though back then, this is the mid to late 1800s, this was a badge of honor to be rich and fat. Today, you're scorned if you're fat. So I can't see a club like that surviving, could it?
Yeah, but with fat clubs, now we have more fat people. Maybe we should bring back the fat clubs.
Right. This would be the time if you're ever going to make a dollar on it, and that's what they charged, a dollar. Was it a dollar a month or a dollar a year?
A dollar, yeah, to join. Once you're in, you're in. A dollar fee.
If you're rich, what is that? You don't care.
It should have been $10
easily.
Back then. Weigh-ins were a competitive event. A New York Times article from 1885 describes the crestfallen reaction of a member of a Connecticut fat man's club upon stepping on the scale. His name is George Capp, and he boasted, "I must weigh over 300 pounds now." Alas, he came in at a disappointing 243.
Oh, man. Don't you hate that when you think you're a lot fatter than you are? That's the worst.
No, it's not that bad. As the Times reported, quote, his friends thought he shrank at least 20 pounds more from grief before the evening.
Oh.
The clubs weren't just venues to celebrate the joys of eating without concern and brag about one's girth. They were essentially networking events.
So they would just sit around, all these fat guys, and talk about how fat they were. They would brag about,
I guess.
You think you're fat? Wow.
Well, fat cats, remember that term?
Yeah.
Memphis's Fat Men's Baseball Club had a reception committee with judges, ministers, and a rabbi.
No, that's pronounced ribeye.
What did one do at a fat man's club gathering? Well, eat, of
sure,
course, a
lots
lot.
Of eating.
At its peak, the New England's Fat Men's Club had 10,000 members.
What?
At
a dollar each, they were rolling in dough.
D-O-U-G-H, like dough, right, not right. Money. The men would cram huge breakfasts into their bellies, then stumble outside and work up a sweat in a friendly Olympic-style competition, showcasing strength and virility, leapfrog contests, broad jumps, and races. The exertion also served to jumpstart appetite for the indulgent dinner spread that awaited members at sundown.
Yeah, something tells me they packed in a lunch somewhere in the middle of the day, too.
I don't know. They had a giant breakfast, then played a little leapfrog with one another. And then
guess what my nightmare is going to look like tonight.
Then one nine-course menu included an oyster cocktail, cream of chicken soup, boiled snapper, filet of beef with mushrooms, roast chicken, roast suckling pig.
And a Diet Coke, if you wouldn't mind.
Shrimp salad.
We're watching our weight. Could you just get us a tab?
Steamed
please?
Fruit pudding with brandy sauce, assorted cakes, cheese, and ice cream, followed by coffees and cigars. The evening was laced with large portions of wit, sarcasm, and roaring laughter.
Sure. Oh, I wish I lived back then.
Wow.
I'm almost big enough. I weigh 186, and
you
am I fat?
No, you don't look like you weigh.
I'm not
that.
Even a little bit fat, but I'm almost enough to get into that. I'd have to go back in time, of course, but I'm almost of the weight requirement to be in a fat man's club.
Yeah, but they say muscle weighs more than fat because you don't look like you weigh 186. So if they don't have much muscle,
oh, maybe that's what it is. All right.
So
you just dashed my dreams of ever being in a fat man's club. This is a dark day for me.
While having wide hips and some girth was considered attractive for a woman, fat ladies were often mocked and included as freak show elements in traveling circuses.
Yep.
Fat men weren't similarly lampooned, though they too faced ridicule. There was one child who exclaimed, "Gee, look at that stomach. Let's get under it and keep out of the rain."
Now, I bet if you said that at a fat man's club event, that would get a good hearty laugh from everybody. They would all enjoy that. "He meant you, Stephen. He meant you, George." They would all laugh.
Very Santa Claus.
Yeah, all like a Santa Claus laugh. Right.
Female versions of fat men's clubs did exist. There was one in Hazleton, Pennsylvania, whose female members weighed 236 pounds on average.
Yeah.
But fat women's reduction clubs were far more common.
Oh, I guess.
It's still okay to be overweight if you're a guy and not a girl.
Isn't that terrible?
Yeah. One of these clubs existed in Chicago just after the First World War and aimed at promoting responsible diet among the city's overweight women.
Oh.
Even in the 19th century, diet pills, sometimes known as obesity pills, were advertised. In a world where power and status mattered a great deal, this was yet another reminder that women tended to have neither.
You know what this reminds me of? And I know his story didn't end well, but there was a movie star named Fatty Arbuckle.
Yeah.
Like today, and again,
he did some terrible things.
He did some very, very awful, awful things. His story, if you don't know his story, look it up and be prepared to be shocked. But you had a movie star, a marquee movie star, with the name Fatty. Like, that would that happen today? You wouldn't have a guy named Fatty something?
You had Porky, you had Spanky, and you had Chubsy Ubsy. I mean, what's the difference?
Right. What a literal time that was.
Traditionally, being fat was closely associated with wealth and status.
Right.
For most of our ancestors, the poorer they were, the less food they had to eat, and the thinner and shorter they tended to be.
Yeah.
And power and wealth and status are attractive characteristics. If a person's body is their temple, then being the size of a cathedral told others that you were someone
you could afford,
of significance.
You could afford to as much to eat as you wanted to. And these guys lived it up.
Wow. And
this footage that I found shows all these big, enormous guys who all look the same. They have similar hats and coats and mustaches and same kind of eyeglasses. And they're just on a streetcar. And people are just watching them because you got 25 just enormous guys hanging out together.
They were having fun.
It seemed like they were having a good time, yeah.
According to this article at NPR.org, a trend in the Fat Man's Club that began around 1910, doctors and insurance companies began to push preferability of underweight to overweight in terms of health and longevity.
Because you live a lot longer, right.
Being fat was no longer feted. Membership at Fat Man's Clubs began to dwindle, as did the waistlines.
Yeah.
For instance, at the last meeting of the New England Fat Men's Club in 1924, only 38 members showed
up. Really?
None of whom met the 200-pound mark.
Oh. They were above that or below
it? Below it.
Oh, they were below it.
Today, body image faces a new chapter. Gone are Twiggy-inspired skinny legs, a line of curvy, more realistic Barbies reflect actual bodies.
Yeah.
Thigh gaps. Do you shop at Thigh Gap?
That's where I get my clothes, at the Thigh Gap.
Hot dog legs and waist trainers, while still a part of the popular lexicon, are criticized for promoting unhealthy body images.
How about that?
It's unlikely, Bill, that fat men's clubs will ever catch on again.
Oh, man.
Current trends toward body acceptance might yet nudge us toward the Goldilocks level of body image. Not too fat, not too thin, just plain healthy.
What do you think the reaction would be? There's an open building right across the street where the Walgreens used to be. If they put a fat man's club in there, what would the reaction be to that in 2016?
I feel body image has changed so much that no one would want to be seen walking in there.
Don't you? I do, too. People would be embarrassed to be associated with it, but back then, everybody wanted in.
That's why you do an online club.
Right.
Because then nobody sees right. you walk in.
So true. All right, a quick break, and then a little bit more show for you before Ro and Anna are here. It's Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder on WGN. Baseball writer and theorist Bill James joins us right now, one of our generation's finest baseball writers. My favorites among his many, many books is the Bill James Baseball Abstract. Bill, this is the best day of the year for baseball because every team is in it. Every team believes they've got a chance of winning it all, right?
We're all undefeated except the Mets, who lost yesterday. Right. And maybe a couple other teams lost. That's right.
All right. Now, Bill, is it true you were working at the Stokely Van Camp Pork and Beans plant in Lawrence, Kansas, and you brought in some box scores to work on, and that's where sabermetrics began?
I would say that's generally true, yes. But the way you phrased the question, it sounds as if you could be a detective and this could be a murder investigation.
So
I may not answer.
All right. So, but we were talking earlier. I've taught my kids when they're eating a hot dog at a ballpark to lean forward so they don't spill mustard on their White Sox jerseys, in our case. And my husband has taught the boys to keep score on the little cards. So tell me what sabermetrics is.
Sabermetrics is picking up the things that announcers say that are not specific things, but generalizations about the game, and trying to figure out whether those things are true or not. For example, an announcer may say that this guy is great at going first to third on a single, so we realize, oh, you know, that's something we could measure. So then we measure that stuff. We try to take everything that somebody says and figure out a way to measure it.
And that's hard to keep track of all that stuff.
Oh,
there's
yeah.
a ton of stuff being announced, and what does can of corn mean in terms of a good player with Hawk Harrelson saying it?
It refers to a long time ago, in order to increase shelf space, grocers used to keep their canned goods stacked up way, way high, and they would have a pole, and they would knock a can of corn off the top of the stack and catch it in their apron as it fell down. So like a can of corn is a pop fly that's coming straight down.
That's pretty cool.
That's the reason. Yeah. Bill, I hope you appreciate how strange it is for us here in Chicago to look at what Las Vegas odds makers have done. They've made the Chicago Cubs the favorite to win the World Series. We're not used to that in town. Is it realistic?
Well, nobody knows who's going to win the World Series. The Cubs have a good team. I mean, I think the Cubs have as good a team as the Cardinals do. But, you know, the Cardinals are going to win 95 games just about every year, and you're going to have to beat them and then get lucky in postseason. So, yeah, I mean, they're a good team.
Yeah.
Any chance of the Cubs making it to the World Series this year?
A very good chance.
Really?
That's good news.
Hey, I live near Kansas City. There are a lot of people around here who never thought that Kansas City was going to be back in the World Series, but they were.
All right, what about the White Sox?
Well, the White Sox had an interesting spring. The White Sox have been in a kind of restructuring mode for two or three years, but I think that there's a lot of terrific players there. And if they can get lucky on some of the places where they have not been getting production in the last two or three years, you never know. They can put it together.
Bill, you're given money. You're given $100 to get a ticket to any baseball stadium in America to watch any player. Who's the player you most want to see for your money?
Well, Mike Trout and Bryce Harper are probably at the top of the list, but you know, Aroldis Chapman is always fun, throwing 110 miles an hour, however hard he throws.
Yeah.
The Red Sox are fun. They're a lot of, Miguel Cabrera, I'd pay a lot of money to see.
Have you ever played baseball yourself, Bill?
Not well enough to talk about.
That's the most diplomatic answer we've had from anybody all day. That was beautiful, Bill. That was beautiful.
But you love the game, don't you?
I do.
It's called America's Pastime for a reason. I mean, it is. I know it's a slower game than others are accustomed with other sports, but that plays into the mythos of baseball, doesn't it? The slowness?
Well, it enables you to enjoy it in different games. There's not a lot of pressure to watch every minute of every second of every contest. It gives you the freedom to look around and enjoy the other things that happen at the ballpark.
Sure.
Yeah, like I like to go to the gift shop in the middle of a Sox game every once in a while and go get a funnel cake.
Yeah.
Because it's nice to get up and stretch that. Yes, and you're not feeling like you're going to miss anything.
Right. Absolutely. Bill, what are you working on now? Are you writing another book right now? You are, aren't you?
Actually, I just finished a book I've been working on for about 5 years, which was a non-baseball book. It has to do with a series of crimes that happened 100 years ago. What I'm actually working on at the moment is I'm fiddling around with designing a baseball game, which I often am. I like to make up like Stratomatic or APA type games.
Yeah.
Nobody ever sees them except me, but that's what I'm doing.
That's fun. I love those kind of games. Those are a blast. Well, it's great to talk to you, especially today, opening day, the day that, as we said, every team is still in it. So, Bill, have a great season. Thanks for talking to us.
Hey, great day. You too.
All right, that's Bill James of the Baseball Abstract. We'll take a quick break. We'll find out what Rowan and I have next. Bill and Wendy, WGN.